for 5 years, although, as I say, you wouldn't know that from approximately 99% of the coverage this morning. Because we live in a country where increasingly facts don't really seem to matter. But the relationship with America does, or at least it did, until very recently. George Robertson made some comments last week about defence spending and welfare that got front page treatment absolutely everywhere. I think his comments more recently about the end, effectively, of the special relationship are considerably more significant.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, ministers insist a new deal with France aimed at stopping illegal small boat crossings will be effective and value for money. More than £600 million will be spent on deploying riot police to French beaches, along with new kit like extra drones. But £100 million could be withdrawn if the French officials don't stop enough migrants from making the illegal journey. But former government special advisor on immigration, Claire Pearsall, has told LBC she has reservations.
They suggest that if they don't stop enough people crossing the channel, then that money will be stopped after a year. What is that number? 1, 10, 100? You know, we don't know any of these details. So it's all very well going off to a lovely signing ceremony, but it doesn't actually make the results going to be any more achievable than the Conservative years.
A former protection officer has told LBC that Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor's security team did not know that Jeffrey Epstein was a convicted sex offender. Scott Hamer has told us that they couldn't have been expected to know about the late financier's convictions on a visit to New York in 2010. Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor has always strongly denied any wrongdoing. The Metropolitan Police has asked former and serving officers to consider carefully whether they have any information to share. The government's cost of living champion has told LBC that he doesn't think retailers are profiteering from the fuel crisis triggered by the Iran war. The cost of filling up a typical family car with petrol has risen by £14 since the start of the conflict. The Strait of Hormuz, which is a key shipping route for global oil and gas, has effectively been closed since late February. Lord Walker has told us that the government is ready to act if prices don't come down when the war ends.
We've obviously seen the prices spike, and that shot up straight away after the Iran war. Obviously, those stocks were bought before the Iran war, so I found it a little bit puzzling. And I think we all
can I push you on puzzling? Come on.
Well, we were all concerned that maybe they were running ahead of their own costs, and that's why I wanted to send a really strong message to them to say profiteering will not be tolerated.
The most senior civil servant at the Cabinet Office has started to give evidence to MPs about the Lord Mandelson vetting saga. Cat Little told the Prime Minister last week that the peer was given clearance, despite security officials raising concerns. And the Duke of Sussex has made an unannounced visit to Ukraine. Prince Harry arrived at Kyiv railway station via an overnight train from Poland. The Duke is scheduled to speak at the Kyiv Security Forum, where he will move to condemn Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 71 at 10,405. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, dry and sunny for large parts of the UK. A warmer day in store, a high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Sorry for the voice note. Just running for the taxi. Did anyone pack hair straighteners?
No, I didn't.
I've got hair straighteners. Everybody relax. Pre-departure drink, anyone?
Sure, you can roam in the EU at no extra cost, but what really matters is friends and family. That's why we're happy to be your second most important network. Tesco Mobile. It pays to be connected. Terms apply. See tescomobile.com/homefromhome.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
After 10 is the time. I don't know whether or not this is yet more evidence of my obsession with bent or biased media, but George Robertson last week accused British leaders of a corrosive complacency towards defence. He was speaking about subsequent and successive prime ministers, but inevitably the country that we currently inhabit was essentially told by its media that he was talking exclusively and entirely about Keir Starmer, which is part of the reason why it became front page news almost everywhere, particularly when you add in that very tabloid-friendly insistence that you should take money away from the welfare state and spend that money instead on weaponry. George Robertson, former head of NATO and a former Labour defence minister, currently earning some of his crust from a consultancy to armament firms, an outfit that helps businesses get government contracts in that field, which is not to say there's a conflict of interest, but it is a bit like the figures on small boat crossings, something that should be contained in any coverage of the bigger picture. I was going to do the small boat crossings things as a missed information, but for reasons that I can't begin to fathom, I decided to do it at the top of my introduction just before the 10 o'clock news instead. Down 35% year on year, but absolutely extraordinarily absent from almost all of the coverage designed to make you angry and fearful with the wrong people. United States of America. The United States of America. America. I used to say America until I think a Venezuelan lady at one of my book signings asked me to stop saying that because it is a little bit, well, it's inaccurate, isn't it? It's a continent, not just a country. The United States of America. What do those words do to you when you hear them? What did they used to do? I remember the first time a friend of mine went to the States. And it wasn't the best present I've ever received, but it was quite thoughtful. He brought me some condiments back from all of the fast food joints that he visited, because this was before I'd ever seen a McDonald's in the flesh. I forget what year McDonald's in Kidderminster opened, but my friend Timothy went to the United States of America before McDonald's opened in Kidderminster. It was like some sort of mythical, golden arches, literally. And he brought me back a bag. He brought me catsups. It was called catsup. It was seemed so glamorous. Beef burgers, hamburgers. Seems so glamorous, the United States of America. I'm not joking now. Cultural reference points, first things you thought of, first things that said the United States of America to you. Again, I'd have to check the dates, but the Dukes of Hazzard would be quite high up on my list. It's the two modern-day Robin Hood, Beau and Luke Duke, and, of course, the inimitable Daisy. It was always a warm feeling, right? And then you learned a little more as you grew older about the role, albeit somewhat belatedly, that the United States played in both world wars, most crucially, of course, post Pearl Harbor in the second, and the argument, despite the deification almost of Winston Churchill, that without the intervention of the United States of America, it's unlikely that the Nazis would have been defeated. And you come away with an even warmer feeling. We know a little bit about Nixon or Vietnam. I mean, it's not a perfect country. The friendship, the relationship, the warmth between Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, for good or for ill, was very real, although it didn't extend to helping us out in the Falkland Islands, of course. And then Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, George Bush, George W. Bush, you sort of run through the US presidents and everything was, if not hunky-dory, then relatively amicable. Barack Obama, Joe Biden. And then you come to today. And the extraordinary, I mean, I mention that because I just want you to get a pin. You know, if you're dropping a pin on a map, I want you to drop a pin on your personal calendar. Any pin at any point in your life, how did you feel as a Brit or as a, you know, a resident of these islands? How did you feel about the United States of America? And I am going to say to you, it was positive. It was a positive feeling. Even, I think, the Iraq War, opposition to it was enough to excuse the regimes on both sides of the Atlantic. Not excuse, that's the wrong word. But detach. You could despise that intervention, although it's 2020 hindsight that really revealed how ridiculous it was, without feeling anything negative towards the entire country or towards the future relationship. To the future relationship between our country and theirs. I suspect, and I don't know this for sure, I suspect that the special relationship always looks a little bit more special from this side of the Atlantic than it does from the other side of the Atlantic. It's a unique relationship. They're celebrating their 250th anniversary of independence from us, this year, not from anybody else. I mean, if history had played out slightly differently, it would have been the Dutch that had the upper hand in colonial America. But we managed to snatch that prize and then lost it subsequently. So there is a unique historical relationship, and there is the commonality of language, of course. I think it was Oscar Wilde who said that it's two peoples divided by a common language, because they, American English and English English, do have slightly different interpretations in many ways. But you think quite warmly, right, about the United States of America. Until now. Until now, because Donald Trump's depravity is just his base awfulness. Is such that he has managed to pollute that future where you just presume, like night follows day, that the United States of America is our friend and our ally, and crucially, it will usually be at our side when push comes to shove. Usually, not always, not at Suez, not in the Falklands. And it's not true anymore. Not least because it would be a reciprocal relationship, which would mean us getting involved in Donald Trump's next mad expedition, just as Keir Starmer was categorically and completely right not to get involved in this one. And that's why I think that George Robertson's comments are much more interesting than his comments last week, about which are essentially a bloke who works in the military industrial complex saying, can we please have more money for the military industrial complex? Now, look, stop clocks and all of that, of course. It looks like a period in British history where we really should be looking to our guns. But you will never find a senior soldier or anybody attached to the military industrial complex or anybody attached to the Ministry of Defence. You will never find a senior character from those worlds who doesn't say we need more money for defence. So it doesn't mean it's not true. It just means it's a little bit dog bites man, right? And I think if he hadn't added, let's take it from the welfare budget, then it probably wouldn't have got the it wouldn't have seen the bearing of the tabloid fangs last week. It was the fact, A, it offered an opportunity to attack Keir Starmer by ignoring the fact that George Robertson was talking about successive British governments, and B, it offered an opportunity to do what is now fast replacing racism as the favourite hobby of the right, attacking people in receipt of support, state support for a variety. Take it off the welfare. Take it off all those people pretending to be sick. Take it off the shirkers. Don't ask any questions. Don't do too much research. I definitely know they're all swinging the lead because my wife's sister's husband's brother's window cleaner's cat's original owner lives in Lanzarote on universal credit. So that gets it propelled onto the front pages as well. But this has got to be more interesting, right? A former defense minister, former NATO secretary general, saying that Britain's military dependence on the US is no longer tenable. No longer tenable. He points not just to Iran and the hideous, unprovoked attack there, but also to tariffs, the levying of tariffs on traditional allies, and most jarringly of all, for him, the threat to wrest Greenland from Denmark. God, the madness moves so quickly, doesn't it? Had you forgotten about that? You've forgotten the President of the United States of America publicly stating his intention to steal a sovereign NATO territory? No? So, the United States is not our friend. Donald Trump has turned the entire country almost into an enemy of what we stand for. He has torn up the historic concord, the historic warmth. I mean, not quite 250 years, because I imagine relations were a little bit frosty in the immediate aftermath of the War of Independence. But certainly in the context of our lifetimes, or in the context of the 20th and 21st centuries, it was one of life's certainties, you know? Wasn't it? In the context even of relatively modern politics, you could have a few things that you could say with complete certainty. Your football team will let you down. Nigel Farage will lie. And the United States of America is our friend. And it's not anymore. We've talked about American politics a hell of a lot on this program, and we will, I think, continue to do so. A, because it's fascinating. B, because it's important. And C, because it is my show, and I find it absolutely riveting for a whole heap of reasons, some of them historic. But sometimes the really big stuff can get swallowed up by the little stuff. That's what the cliche means, isn't it? When you can't see the wood for the trees. Quite often with cliches, we use them without ever stopping to think what they really mean. I love that. I mean, a rolling stone gathers no moss. What does that mean? It means you're zipping around so fast that you're not actually picking anything up. You're not actually making any meaningful observations, or you're not learning anything because you're in such a bloody hurry. You can't see the wood for the trees. What does that mean, you can't see the wood for the trees? Well, it means you're focusing on the trees. So you're talking about raccoons' penises and Pulp Fiction quotes instead of talking about the fact that the relationship with the United States of America is over. And I can't quite see it being restored to where it was 5 years ago, regardless of what happens next, because if you're building military policy, an entirely new dimension has been introduced to your thinking. If you were building military policy in the 1980s or in the 1990s or in the noughties, in the 1950s or the 1960s or the 1970s, of all the pieces on the table that you have to assemble into a domestic defense policy, there's two pieces that have gone in the last 10 years that 20 years ago no one would have thought possible. They wouldn't even have known they were pieces. You've got the allyship of the United States and you've got the membership of the European Union. And in the last 10 years, two things that would, if you like sporting analogies, they'd have been first on the team sheet. The things that were absolute stone-cold certainties. They were so baked in to any interpretation of UK defence policy that you probably wouldn't even have put them on the list of things that need to be taken into consideration because they were so absolutely part of the furniture, right? The United States is our ally. We can rely upon the United States militarily. We are, if you prefer, dependent upon the United States of America militarily, and we are in the European Union and NATO, and NATO is a big deal. All of these things have gone. We're not in the European Union anymore. NATO is increasingly under threat from Donald Trump's depravity, and the United States of America is no longer our friend. It is, in many ways, our enemy. And that goes beyond personality and beyond current incumbents and beyond even modern politics. It is an extraordinary rewriting of what has been, for the best part of 100 years, the natural order in transatlantic relationships. So when a former head of NATO says that Britain's high military dependence on the US is no longer tenable, and that we have to become increasingly independent of Washington, a former NATO chief, a former British defense minister, saying we have to become more independent of the United States and we have to become less dependent on them. That's the same thing, isn't it? I just said it twice in slightly different ways. And here's the really mad bit, right? Hold that thought in your mind, that warm feeling you get when you think of the A-Team or McDonald's or whatever it was when you were a kid that made America seem glamorous and new and exciting. And our friend. Hold that thought in your head. And now hold this question. What does this mean? What does this mean? What on earth does it mean? I don't know how much time you spend in Suffolk or Norfolk, but you've got air bases down there that are essentially American soil. You know? What's the thing you can only buy in the States, like a Tim Tam for Australia? What's the thing you can only buy in the States that you can't buy in Britain? There are a few things on that list. Have we got any Wendy's anymore? You've probably got a Wendy's. Kool-Aid? Does anyone get Kool-Aid in this country? Dr. Peppers, I think you can buy now, although why anybody would want to is beyond me. But you've probably got branches of Wendy's at Mildenhall, or certainly they're like outposts in the same way that British military bases will be selling Marmite and Heinz baked beans. They are so baked, our nuclear deterrent. And this is the embarrassing bit, right? Well, it's not embarrassing. We haven't got a clue what this means, have we? We don't know what this means. Well, I'm hoping you do, otherwise it's going to be the longest monologue in history. But I don't know what this means. I start thinking about Mildenhall or Lakenheath. I start thinking about Trident. I start thinking about this, that or the other. And I think, well, flipping out, that's a bit scary. You can buy root beer in Morrison's, Ian. That's not unique to the United States of America, although I grant you probably not McDonald's root beer. Used to be a thing here. When Kidderminster McDonald's opened, just to give you the entirely false impression that I plan these monologues, I'll just loop it straight back to the beginning and say they used to sell root beer in McDonald's in this country. Delicious. What does this mean? What does it mean? I mean, how? You know my favourite analogy of all time? When I talk about complicated things, it's like getting the eggs out of a baked cake, right? How on earth does the United Kingdom extricate itself from the, quote, special relationship, end quotes, with the United States of America? Three questions. What does this mean? 03456060973. Second question, how does this happen? Any ideas at all? I'll take anything. 03456060973. And the third question, as is often the case when I get to the end of these introductions, do you agree with my analysis? And indeed George Robertson's, that this isn't just a blip. This isn't just a hiccup, a bump in the road. This isn't just a temporary glitch in the relationship between the United Kingdom and the United States, but it's a lesson for the ages. We must now, as a nation, detach ourselves from dependence on the United States of America. They are no longer a reliable ally. I think that's a very strong argument for them no longer being an ally at all. Which leads to question four. What do we do next? What do we do next? So, is it over? How do we do the divorce? What happens next? And if you really want to go mega or meta, what does it mean? What does it mean that the special relationship is over? If you're ex-military or current military, or if you've got insights into this, then I'd be particularly interested in the personal as well as the political. But for the rest of us, it's an exercise in thinking hard, isn't it? What does it mean is the umbrella under which the other three questions sit. And the other three questions are, how does this happen? What does the divorce look like? What do we do next? What does the future look like? And do you agree with the central analysis, the central theme, that it is over? Over. 03456060973. It's a big one, this. And not immediately obvious, but I'd back myself on the contention that this is a much more significant intervention. If you are going to treat George Robertson as somebody whose comments about military matters must be heeded, and last week everybody was, then this is a much more significant intervention than the usual tabloid claptrap about taking money off people on welfare and giving it to the Ministry of Defence instead. This is about the very, on St. George's Day, in fact. Happy St. George's Day, if you celebrate. On St. George's Day, it seems incredibly significant that a former defence minister is talking about the end of the special relay. Right, I've done enough now. It's 23 minutes after 10. You can have a crack after this.
LBC.
Ugh, drizzly drive to the office. Ever wanted to just shove some bits in a bag? Hop on a plane and land somewhere magnifique? Well, with Kayak Explore, it's easier than ever. Whatever your budget, wherever you want to go, simply set the amount you want to spend and Kayak finds flights that fit. Easy breezy. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Here's a bright idea. Let Wix see how much you could save on your electricity bills. With Wix Solar, our team handles everything under the sun, from design to the perfect installation of your solar panels. We're proud as a peacock to be rated excellent on Trustpilot, so you can feel confident your solar installation is in safe hands. Book your free solar appointment today at wix.co.uk. Wix Solar, a name you can trust with service you can rely on.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George is up the ribbon can without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thames Link Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
I do love you. I probably don't tell you this often enough. I do. I love you. Yesterday, we're assembling an analysis, quite possibly, of the beginning of the end of Keir Starmer's premiership. And for reasons that you'll have to use catch-up to establish, it somehow led to the messiness of my man cave and the need for grown-ups in this world. That touched more nerves with you than any of the political analysis or controversial pungent comments that I shared. And today, we're actually discussing the end of the special relationship between the United Kingdom and the United States of America. And my inbox is full of things like this. Did you just besmirch the reputation of Dr. Pepper? If so, I'm turning off, says Matt in Northampton. And then unsigned messages saying things like, Cheese Whiz. Cheese Whizzes. You can't get them in England. And James, they're opening a Wendy's just outside Norwich. In fact, my inbox is absolutely rammed with people who have responded to the little cultural... it's Jim in Leeds with the Cheese Whiz. I do apologise. Not a single natural ingredient in it, but it is delicious. And on it goes. In fact, the Dr. Pepper comment might well prove to be my most controversial this week. Peter's in Hartford. Peter, you can kick things off. What would you like to say?
Thanks, James. Good luck to Kidderminster on Saturday, by the way.
Thank you very much. Well, we don't really need it, do we, on Saturday?
Well, you got your playoff place, haven't you? So, talk with a Ketching Town fan, yes. By the way, so we've crossed paths many times.
Oh, lovely stuff.
James, so my partner's American. We've been together for 5 years now. And every time we go over, I was always this kind of suspicious Brit, you know, kind of, I had the Americana like you, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it was for me growing up.
A bit younger than me.
And, yeah, a little bit teeny tiny. But it's the unapologetic behaviour now of Americans. They don't seem to care anymore now. Before, when I used to be there, I used to say, oh my God, it's Peter, it's the Brit, you know, let's go and show him off. Now, I'm almost a nuisance.
Really?
I'm kind of a... Genuinely, yes. You know, when you meet people in the diner or something like that, you know, you kind of treat it almost... You know, talk about illegal aliens sometimes. I don't get that warm, fuzzy feeling that I used to when I first started going over to America. And I love America, and I love my baseball, I love my beers, you know, pull up a stool at the bar, that kind of thing.
That's a very personal... It's a very personal response. Do you think it's linked to the politics? The insularity, Trump? I mean, are your wife's family MAGA leaning, or...?
Unfortunately, I believe they are. They are Jewish.
It doesn't mean they're MAGA, but
It's the reason they voted in Trump for his stance on Israel.
His support for Israel. Okay,
and that's just for the record,
plenty of Jewish people not happy with the stance on Israel, particularly in the United States of America. But in the case of your wife's family, that's fine.
But we'd sit around the Seder table, for instance, and the first time I went round, they were all bullish and happy and excitable. The year after, when the whole Trump, you know, dystopian future started unraveling, they would not say boo to goose. No politics talk. Nothing like that. They were, and it was just a bizarre switching off of the dial, James. It really was.
And that cuts both ways now. So the idea that we would be able to rely upon the United States in the future with a different president, a different administration, is dead.
It doesn't get fixed overnight, does it? It's not like, like what's just happening in Hungary. So they've been withholding all the funds for Ukraine. A new president comes in, boom, we can now, you know, switch it on straight away. This relationship does not get fixed in a generation, I don't think, now.
No, I don't either. And of course, it poses the other questions we're asking this hour, which is, what does that mean? What does the divorce look like? What does the divorce look like? I need a sort of military strategist to answer that question. What on earth? Another day, give it 6 months, we'll probably be talking about the end of NATO as we know it, if Trump's still in power. But what on earth would it mean to enact George Robertson's advice and detach ourselves from High military dependence on the United States of America. Thank you, Peter. Good luck to Kettering. 29 minutes after 10 is the time. Long introduction, but I want to hear more. There's nothing to stop us carrying this over into the second hour, by the way. We can do what we want on this show, within reason. So don't sort of think that we're going to contain all of the conversation in the first calls. There's so much to cover here that I want you to really put your thinking cap on and have a crack at all of it. Or any of it. The baked cake question, what does the divorce actually look like? The central thesis that this is permanent, or at least generational, as Peter puts it, and not just a blip, not just something that is only true for the duration of the Trump administration. And what on earth do we do next? What do we do next? There's one quite obvious answer to that question, but I might wait for you to provide it rather than sticking my oar in again. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Riot police will be deployed on French beaches as part of a new deal to stop migrants crossing the Channel in small boats. Under the agreement, more than £600 million will be invested in stopping the illegal boat crossings. The most senior civil servant at the Cabinet Office has started to give evidence to MPs about the Lord Mandelson vetting saga. Cat Little told the Prime Minister last week that the peer was given clearance despite security officials raising concerns. And the Duke of Sussex has made an unannounced visit to Ukraine, arriving overnight via a train from Poland. Prince Harry is scheduled to speak at the Kyiv Security Forum today, where he'll move to condemn Russia's invasion. LBC weather, dry and sunny for large parts of the UK through today. A warmer day in store, a high of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
This week with Lidl's Garden Event, you can reserve your ceramic Kamado barbecue for just £249. Claim yours through the Lidl Plus app and collect it in-store next week. Now we're cooking. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lidl-plus-terms. Offer ends 26th of the 4th, 26.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip
weight
is,
loss? I...
No, forget that. No, you
just keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Here's a bright idea. Let Wix see how much you could save on your electricity bills. With Wix Solar, our team handles everything under the sun, from design to the perfect installation of your solar panels. We're proud as a peacock to be rated excellent on Trustpilot, so you can feel confident your solar installation is in safe hands. Book your free solar appointment today at wix.co.uk. Wix Solar, a name you can trust with service you can rely on.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
10:33 is the time. Britain's high military dependence on the US is no longer tenable, and the UK must become increasingly independent of the special relationship with Washington. Not my words, George Robertson, former head of NATO and Labour Defence Minister, who last week, when he was calling for more military spending and less spending on welfare, had his words plastered over every front page in the country. Not so today, despite the fact that these words strike me as being considerably more significant and important. Peter is in Hackney. Peter, what made you pick up the phone?
Good morning. Well, it's been a real psychological sadness for me to move to the state of thinking of America now as a potential enemy, and I can go into that if you want. But in terms of what we can do now, then it seems that at least off the top of my head, three things.
Go on.
Some of which have been covered before. First is to work as hard and as fast as we can with Europe. Not just the EU, but Europe.
Yes.
Because geographically we are bound to them, whether or not we like it or not. Secondly is to have similar arrangements where we can with mid-range countries like Canada or Australia or whatever. And the third thing, and I know your listenership, if I get this wrong, people will chip in. But look at our defence spending. I have it in my mind there was a huge debate about why we need an aircraft carrier sucking in vast amounts of money, where we've seen that the risks now are much more sort of land-based, things like that. So maybe a review, and not try to project a global influence where we can't afford it, and we ought to spend the money more wisely.
So, that's interesting. So to recognise our limitations in a way, yeah. Even the sort of lessons of Suez have not been fully heeded by some people who think that we still rule the waves, or that we still should, Britannia still should rule the waves. What would more cooperation look like? It would mean a sort of European defence force or a European army in which we were all equal partners.
I think we'd have to do what... I have a friend who lives in Latvia.
Latvia?
He talks about how... He talks about how he grew up at the time of the Soviet Union, and of how different economic activities were farmed out of the different countries. So it would not make sense for every separate Europe-based country, including ourselves, to try and do everything. We would need to organize and say, okay, we would focus on producing more missiles, and maybe Norway would do this, that, no. So we'd need to have a sort of rational supply chain in our alliance to make sure we didn't try and do everything ourselves and worked to the best benefit.
So, we're talking about getting the eggs out of a baked cake, but you remind us that we almost have to bake the new cake from scratch, don't we? And that would involve all manner of shifts to the natural, what we thought was the status quo, what we thought was the natural order.
And I think just something is how we also, as part of this, we have to somehow get it into a wider consciousness that America cannot be relied on.
Yes,
it's a real trauma, really, for most people.
I think trauma is a wonderful word to use. It cannot be relied on, and that's what I tried to convey in my introduction. That is an upsetting of the apple carts of our lives.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, of course, not ready for it. And the only bit I guess we can't say with strength is, or certainly with certainty, is that it is permanent, or it is deep-rooted, this shift in relations, and not confined to the duration of the current regime in the White House. I think the fact that it can happen changes everything forever. Even if it unhappens, it can happen again. Thank you, Peter. It's a great call. It is 10:36. You want to join this conversation, the number you need is 0345 606 0973. How does the divorce work? I don't even know if we're ready to begin answering that question. So how does the divorce work, and what does the rebuilding look like? Zuhair is in Ealing. Zuhair, what would you like to say?
Yes, hi, James. So there are some narratives, false narratives, that are really global, that change a lot of things, and this is one of these global narratives, this so-called special relationship,
yes,
which is now no longer true.
Well, hang on. I mean, let's instead call it high military dependence on the US from the part of the UK, which is true.
Yeah.
So it's more about that today. Yeah. I've used the phrase special relationship, but that engulfs culture and history and sport. Yeah. But this is the high military dependence, which is currently in place and needs to be dismantled.
Correct. And I don't think that our politicians have yet got their head around this.
No, I don't.
And this huge change. And this is why I'm afraid that the change that is needed may not happen until they realize the global shift that's happened. That's fine.
Yes.
But also, if I can mention the economic aspect as well, that is also in jeopardy. You know,
of course it is. Well, tariffs did that. Tariffs exploded economic cooperation.
Yeah, exactly. And then from that big narrative, you get all the other important narratives that have changed as well. These false narratives. For example, the war with Iran. So the U.S. Says that, you know, Iran's always the aggressor, and they did all this, and they were the cause of everything. They forget that in 1953 they changed the democratic government, a democratically elected president who was Mossadegh, and brought in a CIA.
So I was just going to steer you back to the conversation that we're having today. We've had this phone in, and we will have it again, and it is fascinating, and it is a key point, but it's one that we've made when having conversations specifically about Iran. What does, I mean, and you may not have an answer to this question, because I don't think I do, what does the beginning of the dismantlement look like? here? What do we do first? Do we close the bases? Do we renegotiate Trident? What do we do?
It really means a whole review of everything to do with our military relationship with America.
Well, respectfully, that's the umbrella. What's under it?
So, yeah, absolutely.
Do we put French nuclear missiles in UK subs, as Jim suggests?
We cannot rely on the American nuclear deterrent, that's for sure. So we need to depend on our own and Europe.
The more you think about this, the more you talk about this, the bigger the issue becomes. It's extraordinary, really. And it's not getting the coverage that comments about, spend all the welfare money on bombs got last week, when it was the same man making the comments. He's right here, by the way, in my view, and so far in your view as well. But the questions abide, don't they? They're getting bigger with every call. What does the dismantling look like? How do you get the eggs out of the cake? What is the divorce? What will be the terms of the divorce? It's, extraordinary. And what do we do next? Pete's in Witten. Pete, what would you like to say?
James, we need to spend.
Did you say
that is the one? Yeah.
God,
I worked with the Americans in Afghan in 2008, 2009. We are so reliant on them. It's your last listener talking about the nuclear deterrent. I was using American radios, American satellites to speak to American assets. Without that, I wouldn't have been able to do our job. Our supply lines, we were resupplied by the Americans. People need to realise our current forces will fill Wembley Stadium with seats to spare.
Yes.
We've got a ship that can barely make it to Cyprus and is now broken down. We've got two aircraft carriers that aren't deployable at the moment.
This is all while we're in the special relations. This is all while we are military dependent on the United States of America.
We've become complacent.
When you were in Afghanistan, did you recognise the dangers that you're describing now? Or was the special relationship so baked in that it didn't really cross your mind that this could be problematic, this level of dependence?
At that point, it was baked in.
Yeah, that's why I'm glad you said that.
We've come to expect it,
That's what I'm trying to convey, is that it's a complete upsetting of the order, isn't it? The natural order of things. And those are the hardest things to accept sometimes. The really big things, the woods, if you like, rather than the trees, are harder to see sometimes.
100%. And now we've almost become, it's too late. The realisation has come too late. The spending hasn't been there. We can barely recruit people. Retention is really bad. But we've always had the Americans will be there. And I think the Falklands back in the 80s, sort of our last proper on our own military engagement and operation.
Yeah.
If the Argentinians invaded tomorrow, those pictures from the 80s of the task force being deployed, retaking the islands, that is over. We won't be able to do that.
Well, I hope you're wrong, and I hope we don't find out. And I think it's probably fair to say that Argentina's armed forces aren't what they were in the 1980s either. But I take your central point. Here's the next bit of the question then, Pete, which is about what we do next. If we're going to run with the divorce analogy, who do we start dating?
We need to get back with Europe quickly. You think back to Brexit, and I don't want to bring it up, but, European...
We hate people who bring up Brexit on this programme, Pete. It's terrible. It's awful.
But, we don't want to be part of a European army, the front page of the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
Well, if we're not part of a European army and the relationship with America is gone, then we're on our own. And
do
that's
we know
terrifying.
Why? What was that design? Was it just an anti-foreigner thing? It was just like, how could it have been? I thought at the time, and it was inevitably, it was Farage that was banging that pathetic little drum harder than anybody else. It's the armies that we're not in that we should worry about, not the armies that we are in.
It's a mistaken belief that we were stronger and better than we actually are.
And that actually ties in with a story today about Farage saying he's going to rewrite curriculums in British schools. I don't think he even went to university, so quite what his qualifications would be to tell the history teachers of this country what they should and should not be teaching, I do not know. But I'll tell you what it will involve. Less foreign history. Less foreign history and less nuance. maybe a halo, for example, for Winston Churchill, because that's what British exceptionalism looks like. And I think Pete's probably right. That's a more generous reading than the racist one, in that people like Farage were opposed to a European army because they thought that we were still in Britannia Rules the Waves territory, as opposed to the country that Farage and Johnson and the rest of them have turned us into. Britannia Waves the Rules. It's coming up to 11:15. Should we hit this break on time for once? Just to see what it... Should we even go a little bit early? Peter in Stockholm's up first after this, but 30 seconds early, lads.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I think it does terminal damage to this image of the Prime Minister as a fastidious, careful, process-driven lawyer with an eye for detail. I think it does a serious amount of damage to the idea that while, yes, it's a very difficult job, this being Prime Minister business, that Starmer is actually a decent bloke. I don't think he is. I think he has knowingly attempted to bury someone to save his own skin.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialized in installing our fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. Perfect for modern apartments, conservation areas, listed properties, or simply for those who don't want an ugly unit on the outside. Head to coolyou.london. Daddy cool. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
Dan's in.
Jen's in.
Tom. Alice. Looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save 1/3 on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
Southeastern.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save 1/3 off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip
weight
is...
Weight loss?
I... No, forget that.
Never,
it just happens.
Keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
I swear.
Advice. Advice.
Or... you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Fever Tree Ginger Beer. There's no one quite like you, is there? That fiery character. Warming undertones. Mixed, you make a spirited Moscow Mule. But even on your own, you still have the most delectable kick. Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10:47 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We've never actually had that phone in that Pete just touched on there about why it was so effective. The sort of Farageist claptrap about European armies being something we should fear. Did it have a Second World War dimension? You know, when I first started doing this job, that people would call the EU the Fourth Reich or the EU-SSR. And I discovered quite quickly, if you asked them what that meant, they would fall apart like a cheap suit. A bit like Nigel Farage did on occasion he dared to speak to me in person. But the European army still baffles me. It's an extraordinary thing that has happened when you look at the state of the special relationship now and the idiocy of continuing faith in dependence upon the United States of America, that we've cut off our umbilical to continental Europe as well. Because any military cooperation is going to be easier for countries that are already in an economic partnership, an economic marriage. It just obviously, because of things like trade and British companies being able to bid for contracts and the simple parameters of cooperation, but they've blown it. they've blown that up as well. And speaking of that shower, I think it's time to start helping other journalists work out how you handle these people if you don't want to see the United Kingdom go down a route similar to the United States of America. Channel 4 News doing a bang-up job of reminding us how convincingly and how casually Farage abandons the truth at every opportunity. So I think I want you first to listen to him responding to Channel 4 News's correspondent Amelia Jen when she questioned him about Richard Tice's tax affairs, which aren't getting the level of coverage you might have expected them to get after more revelations in the Sunday Times.
But the accuser is a Labour Party activist. I think that's quite an important point.
Labour Party activist. Why has he investigated Keir Starmer and Angela Rayner?
Well, Angela Rayner he did do, but he is a Labour Party activist. And you'll find there have been a lot more attacks on us than they have on the other. And as Richard says, all of this was done by professional accountants, and he has spoken to HMRC about it. If there's a problem, he will pay. But it's likely that there's not a problem because someone like Richard, who, by the way, you know, has run big PLCs in this country during his business career. I mean, you know, the guy is not there to make mistakes and employs the top professionals. You know, all I would say to you is that Richard Tice has had a long, distinguished career in business. And if there is an error, if his accountants have made an error, he'll put it right. But I very, very much doubt that that will be the case.
He's a Nepo baby, isn't he, Tice? I think he's a Nepo baby. Anyway, here he is, Tice himself.
If anybody from any other party had been in that situation and tried to dodge paying the correct amount of tax, no one would have screamed and hollered louder than the Deputy Prime Minister. And morally, her position was always completely indefensible. What she's done is blame everybody else but herself. She's blamed the legal advice. She's drawn in the complications of a court order. It was obvious. You cannot claim that you've got two main residences in different parts of the country, hundreds of miles apart. It's right that she pays the correct amount of tax. I would expect that a penalty may well be imposed, but if she had any integrity, any moral decency, given her position as Deputy Prime Minister, she would offer her resignation to the Prime Minister.
They are so full of it, aren't they? But what I liked about the Channel 4, although, I mean, she could have come back again, is he just does that nonsense. Oh, it's a Labour Party activist. It's literally the same tax expert that pursued Angela Rayner for her stamp duty mistakes and errors. It's literally the same person. But the combination of lies and victimhood, he usually gets away with it. Gets away with it, sadly, in this studio on a fairly regular basis. But you just hit him with knowledge. Of course, the prerequisite of hitting him with knowledge is having knowledge and caring about facts and knowledge. But to claim that it's biased because the bloke that exposed Angela Rayner is somehow working in cahoots with the Labour Party is a lie so egregious that, well, only he could make it. But anyway, Nepo Baby Tice is to be trusted on this because he's such a successful business person. 10:52 is the time. Just a little digression. Ah, Ash is here. Hurrah and huzzah. What do you want to say about this one? Ash, for people who don't know, is now, thanks largely to his promotion on this programme, a widely respected international expert on shipping matters. Of course, he was all of those things before he ever phoned me, but I like to take the credit for everything. Ash, what's on your mind?
Okay, so, good morning, James.
Hello, mate.
There are two systems running parallel to each other that we need to consider when you're thinking about naval logistics. And this is a wonderful historic moment to go back to. The first system is naval logistics, and yes, the second system is now globalization. Globalization at its heart is the use of merchant navy routes that we used to secure by the Royal Navy, but we now secure by finance. Yep.
Yes.
So you're securing it by, it becomes a system that's too big to fail. Everybody's making too much money. No one's going to attack these supply lines.
That's so really helpful. That actually clarifies something that I've been thinking about quite a lot since the Iran war started, which is why don't we have more wars that are essentially revenue-raising exercises? I touched on it yesterday from the olden days when a war was essentially an attempt to annex more territory in which people would pay tax to the monarch or pay tax to the warlord or pay tax to the king. And the reason why it doesn't happen anymore is that people are generally happy. The latter-day monarchs and warlords, who are, of course, venture capitalists and business people, they're quite happy with the way things are arranged and the way things are unfolding.
Precisely. Everyone's making too much money. So rather than having East India Trading Company, which would run three gundeck boats of the line as merchant vessels, taking goods backwards and forwards to protect themselves, you now use finance to protect it.
Gosh.
So
it's not the best phone line, Ash, so let me nudge you, if I may, towards this a special relationship and what the end of it would look like against the backdrop of what you've just described.
Okay, so now with the naval supply lines and the way the Navy works and everything's integrated with NATO, we've come to rely on NATO for all these things. You've hit yourself to baked egg custard trying to get the eggs out of it. You can't, but what you can do is you can wait for somebody sane to be in the White House and then try to decouple. Doing it with somebody who is this volatile, not possible.
I hadn't thought of that. So oddly, it's the third way that you describe, and I'm gonna knock it on the head there because the phone line just about sustained our ability to understand what you were saying, but only just. So it's not a question of we wait for somebody better to get into the White House and hope that things go back to normal. It's the fact that we wait until somebody sane is in the White House and then recognize the new reality that we can't carry on as we are. That's fantastic and almost certainly true. Thank you, Ash. Peter's in Stockholm. Peter, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. Great to speak to you again.
Likewise.
So I come from it as a person born and raised in Sweden. I lived 10 years in fantastic London, so I'm also a naturalized British citizen. And what I like to say is that now just the special relationship, as you like to call it, any relationship...
Not just me, mate. I mean, it's a fairly well-established phrase.
sure. But I think what I'm going to convey in a short moment is some kind of some optimism, I think. I think trust, any relationship has to be built on trust. And now that you have almost lost any semblance of trust, you have to look at risk management. And risk management, in my opinion... and I think all of the callers have said the same thing, so I'm in good company, I believe. We need to decouple. When I say we, I also speak as a European, not only as a British citizen. Yeah. And I'm glad that Ash came before me, fantastic contribution as always. He said, let's wait for a more stable leader in the White House.
I hadn't thought of that. So what do we do in the meantime? Just muddle through? Just stay out of his ludicrous, unprovoked, illegal wars and focus on the finish line?
Somehow, I believe so. But I think what I also want to say is that in Sweden, we love American culture, what America has contributed to science and innovation. There's so many good things about America, or I should say USA. I believe you're right that it should be called that.
Yes.
But here comes the but.
Go on.
In a relationship, this has become an abusive relationship now. And at some point, you just need to face reality and say to yourself that, sure, we live together, we have so much things intertwined in each other's lives, but this cannot go on. And rather than have this vulnerability of depending on America, the USA, we should look at other liberal democracies. I think Peter and Hackney say the same thing. There is the EU, there is Canada, there is Australia. And I think one thing we should all remind ourselves of, the reason we all took our lead from the USA in many questions is not, I believe, primarily because of financial might or military might even. It's because of something more intangible, shared values. And at the going rate, the way the country is developing in the USA, we are detaching ourselves in that very important aspect. And I think we should look at it more as, I dare to say, China, which we have cooperation with. We have economic trade with them, but we don't see them as an ally. We keep them at arm's distance. And I think this is what we need to start thinking of when it comes to the USA.
Yeah, and I guess the obvious answer and the only answer to the question of who we start dating next or what the rebuild looks like is enhanced and much greater cooperation with our European allies, up to and now including matters military. So a European army feels at 10:59 today pretty close to inevitable. But
okay, actually, can I say something on that?
Yeah, of course.
There's a theory that I want to present. So in Sweden, there was huge opposition to joining NATO. Sweden only joined NATO 2 years ago, and there's still opposition to it in some quarters of society. And I believe the reason is that, and I think that's what Farage might have meant, is that when you are part of a military alliance, sometimes you join a war, not out of choice, but of obligation.
Of course.
So, yeah, and I think that's perhaps what he meant, that if the UK is part of the European army, some wars will be entered not because the UK wants to join, but because it has to join.
But that's the same as Article 5 of NATO.
Exactly, but
yeah,
but
no, you're being too. You're being very generous. He didn't mean that. He just doesn't like fighting with the foreigners.
I think so.
And he was using the shadow of the Second World War to scare credulous people into thinking that the European Union would somehow represent a victory for the Germans. In fact, I think they used to even say stuff like that. It's extraordinary how much of this gets washed away, isn't it, by events. I've got a missing word round for you. It has a sort of military element to it. You're going to enjoy this. Here's the headline with two words removed, cunningly, by me. Pilots rebuked for flying in blank blanks. If you don't know this and you guess correctly, you probably need some sort of help. Pilots rebuked for flying in blank blanks. And if you don't know this and you guess correctly and you text me the answer, I probably won't believe you anyway. But whatever you do, don't put your answer into your search engine by accident. Pilots rebuked for flying in blank blanks.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood is due to sign a new deal with France aimed at stopping migrants crossing the Channel in small boats. The agreement, worth more than £600 million, will see riot police deployed on French beaches, among other resources. But some of the funding could be withdrawn if not enough journeys are stopped by Paris. Minister for Border Security Alex Norris has insisted to LBC it'll be money well spent.
There is core funding that is going to drive an increase of more than 40% in terms of boots on the ground, stopping smugglers, stopping people getting into boats. There's going to be increased capacity around maritime operations. And then on top of that, there'll be innovation funding, depending on the effectiveness of those interventions. If they don't work, then they will not be funded. Whereas previously, the deal we inherited from our predecessors, the money came come what may.
The top civil servant at the Cabinet Office is giving evidence to MPs about the vetting process of Lord Mandelson. Kat Little said she had asked Sir Ollie Robbins in February for access to files about the process, but he wasn't forthcoming. Sir Ollie was sacked as head of the Foreign Office last week after it emerged that Peter Mandelson was given clearance despite concerns being raised. Addressing the Foreign Affairs Committee in the last hour, Kat Little appeared to question Sir Ollie's claim that he was denied access to seeing the vetting document.
I have obviously looked at what Sir Ollie has said, and I can't at this stage see the audit trail for that request, and I don't know who Sir Ollie made that request to.
Yeah.
All I can see is that the personnel security team at the Foreign Office requested information relating to vetting on the 15th, and that was granted.
Iranian state media have released video footage of the country's military seizing foreign-flagged vessels in the Strait of Hormuz. Tehran's forces have detained two ships in the key waterway as tensions with the United States remain high. The White House confirmed overnight that there'll be no end date to the current ceasefire with Iran, with the US Navy continuing its blockade of Iranian ports. The Duke of Sussex has made an unannounced visit to Ukraine. Prince Harry arrived at Kyiv railway station via an overnight train from Poland. The Duke is scheduled to speak at the Kyiv Security Forum today and tomorrow, where he'll move to condemn Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And London Underground services are expected to wind down in the next hour ahead of another 24-hour strike. Members of the RMT union are walking out in a dispute over moving to a four-day working week. TfL says the changes are voluntary. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 71 at 10,405. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, dry and sunny for large parts of the UK. A warmer day in store, a high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 11 is the time. Nobody's seen it yet, this story, I don't think. I'll have a look at some of your answers shortly. It's very, very funny. I want to do something a little bit different with you now, if I may. And it is a question that we've asked before, but not in this way. The social media addictions that seem to be blighting so many existences, particularly of young people. You touched on it yesterday, didn't we? This sense that moral panics through the ages, all of the things that were supposed to represent a profound threat to decency and normality, whether it was video games or video nasties, came before video games. Video nasties, video games. What else was on the moral panic list? The things that were going to be so damaging to the younger generation that their poor little brains would be boiled beyond all recognition. And they've almost all, well, they have all pretty much passed off without any of the horrors predicted by the usual suspects being visited upon us. And I've got a problem now. Well, I've got a lot of problems, but that ain't one. I've got a problem now because I imagine at the time there must have been people like me who try their best to you know, be honest and look past the attempts to scaremonger and sow fear. There must have been people like me who sat there going, do you know what? I think the video games might actually be the real deal. I think this might be the moral panic that we should actually be very scared about. It's not like the video nasties. You know, the video game. I had one thought when I was playing a lot of Grand Theft Auto. And it was, I'd be driving around town sometimes and I'd see a nice motorbike. I'd see somebody go past on a nice motorbike. And I had this very brief impulse to knock him off his bike and steal it and ride away. Because that's what you do in the game. But it's just like the tiniest impulse. And it just made me wonder what had happened to my brain to make that happen. Because when you're playing Football Manager or Jet Set Willy as a teenager, these things were not happening to your brain. You never found yourself walking across the landing of a staircase and thinking, oh, I might just see if I can jump up onto the next one, because that's what you do in the video game. But there was something so immersive about that new generation of video game, of which Grand Theft Auto was the pioneer, that you genuinely carried almost echoes of the game into your real life. So I don't think it would be fair of me to say that everybody who ever believes in a moral panic is an idiot until now, because I believe in this one. I think, as a caller yesterday, in a completely different subject, what were we talking about yesterday? The teacher, are we talking about young people and our betrayal of them and social media being a huge part of the burdens that they carry? And representatives from Meta, Roblox and TikTok have all been telling MPs that their platforms are not inherently addictive. I mean, what's your first thought? They would say that, wouldn't they? Do you know that Elon Musk's Twitter has refused to take down hideous footage that the Southport killer was watching moments before he made his way to that dance class? That's free speech for you. for Elon Musk and J.D. Vance's world. But they would say that, wouldn't they? It's a bit like the water companies, isn't it? They're not going to stop pumping shocking amounts of sewage into our waterways unless it costs them more to do it than it does not to do it. That is probably the cleverest thing I said last year. And I appreciate there's not a lot of competition. But it is so simple. It's sometimes the cleverness lies in getting it as simple, boiling it down to absolute bare minimum of words that convey 100% of meaning. They will not stop pumping sewage into our waterways until it costs them more to do it than it does not to do it. And the same is true of social media companies. They will not stop pursuing and corrupting young minds unless it costs them more to carry on doing it than it does to stop doing it. And the only way you do that is with absolutely high-level legislation and regulation. But it is the nature of addiction that I am interested in today, because they are going to say that it's not addictive, and it is not going to be immediately easy to prove, if you like, that it is. So I wonder whether this will work, and I hope it will, but I will be nothing without you. I remember being a little bit puzzled and not unamused when we first heard about sex addiction. Do you remember that? If you're my age, it was probably Michael Douglas. Michael Douglas was the first person we'd ever heard of who was suffering from a sex addiction. And you sort of thought at first glance, you thought, flip it out, I'd rather be addicted to sex than heroin. And then when you actually thought about it, or if you did any research into addiction or tried to find out more about these matters, the addiction to the dopamine, the addiction to the brain chemistry, the boost in your brain chemistry that you get, doesn't have to be chemical, doesn't have to be involve ingesting chemicals. It can involve doing things that prompt your brain to release the chemicals. So the more you thought about it and the more you looked at it, the more plausible it became that you could be addicted to sex. It sounded like a brilliant excuse in a sort of end of the pier, saucy postcard kind of way, didn't it? You could just imagine not Andy Capp, because he wasn't very active in that department, but you could just imagine a sort of carry-on film character, Sid James probably, telling his wife that he can't help cheating on her with Barbara Windsor because he's got a sex addiction. He's got a doctor. Jim Dale would come in as the doctor, wouldn't he? And Jim Dale in his white coat would say, yes, he has a sex addiction. And we'd all snigger and think that it was funny. It's not funny at all, I don't imagine, if you're suffering from it. It's certainly not funny at all if you're being betrayed by somebody who is suffering from it. So the nature of addiction in the course of our life, our understanding of it in the course of our lives, has changed a lot. In the same way that perhaps our understanding of neurodiversity has. When I was a kid, there were people who didn't think dyslexia was real, in much the same way that various idiots today don't think that ADHD is real, or that other neurodiversities can't possibly exist because they didn't have a name when I was young. This is pretty much what you need to have as a worldview in order to get a column in the Daily Mail. So we know that addiction is different, and that it is not just going to be about crack cocaine or even gambling. I want people who have been addicted to other things to tell me whether or not they think that social media platforms are addictive. I just want you to tell me what it is that makes an addiction, what constitutes an addiction. It's 11 minutes after 11. That's the ask, okay? 0345 60 60 973. And I think there's a growing understanding of the dangers of these platforms. I remember a friend of mine who worked in marketing. I've told you this before, but it's worth repeating, because he was one of the people that I would consult when I was having conversations about various technologies or various developments. He's no longer with us, sadly. I've lost two friends in the last five or six years who were my go-to guys for insights into the industry, into the interplay of media and social media and marketing and hooking consumers. And I've lost them both. So a grim coincidence. But he had a look at TikTok. because his daughter was using it, and he was unfamiliar with the platform. Eventually you run out, don't you? I had quite a big presence on Facebook, I had a massive presence on Twitter, I've got quite a big presence on Blue Sky. I'm never on Instagram, I don't even know if I've got an account on TikTok. I don't know if you can, you just eventually reach a point where you think, oh, it's one platform too many. But anyway, you need to be across some of it if your children are using it. So he went on TikTok and he phoned me. And he said, I've just spent 2 hours on TikTok. And I said, well done. Why are you ringing me? He said, because I thought I'd spent 10 minutes. He said, I've never seen anything like it in my life. I reacted to what was being put in front of me subconsciously. The stuff that I like, which in his case, and happily in mine, is relatively innocuous. I'm currently being bombarded with film clips of bullies getting beaten up. I don't know what I did to make that the algorithm's delivery of choice at the moment, but it makes a change from ping pong, which is where my algorithm always ultimately seems to go back to. But my mate rang me and he said, this is extraordinary. Because what I'm being fed now is an absolutely unleavened diet of stuff I can't stop watching. And it took 2 hours. It took less than that for the algorithm to grab him by the ears and package him up to sell, of course, to providers, to the platform, to advertisers, or whatever the business model ultimately is and turns out to be. But he couldn't believe how quickly it had turned into something that he felt he couldn't look away from. And when he checked the time, he'd been there for 2 hours, not 10 minutes. So that, to me, speaks to something more than me in the early days of Facebook catching up with lads I went to school with that I hadn't seen for 40 years. It speaks to something different, right? I think it speaks to addiction. I don't know what word we would use if the word is not addiction. But I just out of my own personal curiosity, I want to know what actual addicts to more traditional things, former recovering addicts, I think. I don't know if it would be appropriate for you to ring me if you... Well, yeah, it's up to you, isn't it? So the more easily acceptable and understandable addictions, which will be drugs, it will be alcohol. Gambling's a really good example, because gambling doesn't involve ingesting chemicals. And yet, I don't think anybody doubts that you can become addicted to gambling. So if gambling can be addictive, then of course I would argue a social media platform could be. It's 11:15. You challenge this if you want, but unless you're being paid a ton of money by Meta, Roblox or TikTok, I can't currently conceive of how you could argue that social media companies are not addictive. They've also said they think that a social media ban on under-16s would be unenforceable. So, as I said, they're never going to do anything unless they absolutely had to. Snapchat didn't even bother to turn up. They cancelled at quite short notice, which the committee chair was unhappy about. But as I said, you don't get these characters to do anything unless they absolutely have to. And the first thing that they're not going to do is admit that it's addictive. Of course they're not, any more than tobacco companies admitted. You see, younger listeners won't believe this. The tobacco companies knew that nicotine was addictive decades before it was commonly and widely accepted. You know why they had to keep it quiet? Because they were making a ton of money. It's why the name Don Perlman is the single... If you only ever Google one thing as a consequence of listening to this program, Google Don Perlman. I said this to you yesterday. He is the godfather of climate change denial. And once you read the detail of how he did it, I hope that you will find it as easy as I do to dismiss the nonsense spouted by people like Nigel Farage and Nepo Baby Tice about net zero. Because this is what they do. They absolutely, deliberately destroy facts in pursuit of profits and money. So nicotine wasn't addictive, according to the tobacco companies, long after they had absolutely incontrovertible evidence that nicotine was addictive. Fossil fuels weren't causing pollution or climate change was denied by the fossil fuel companies long after they had incontrovertible evidence that it was. And social media companies today are denying that social media platforms are addictive, despite the fact that some of these dudes in California don't let their own children anywhere near the platforms that they have made their fortunes from. Why would that be? So how do you prove it? I can't prove it definitively, but what we can do together is nudge towards two things. If you have a more traditional addiction, which is an odd word to use, but I think you know exactly what I mean, a more traditional, a more widely understood addiction, I want you to do one or two of the following. I want you either to tell me whether you think social media platforms are correctly described as addictive, and or I want you to tell me how you would describe addiction to someone who has never been an addict. It's not FOMO. It's like a grade, isn't it? It's like depression, actually. We have all been sad, but we have not all been clinically depressed. People who have been clinically depressed, a bit like people who have got obsessive compulsive disorder, can be forgiven for being enormously impatient when the rest of us use those words to describe relatively spectacular happenings. Oh, I like to have my mugs all facing the same way in the cupboard. I'm so OCD about it. OCD is hell to live with. Wanting your mugs arranged in a certain way is not a hellish consideration. Having to go through rituals to the point of interfering with your and the people around you life is not funny or light-hearted. And ditto, you know, being a bit sad does not mean you're depressed. And so it is with addiction. You know, oh, I find it quite hard to turn away from my phone, or I like a glass of wine in the evening. I want you to tell me what addiction is and what distinguishes it from doing something too much or finding it hard to give something up. And those two things, I think, are where we're going next. What is it exactly, and does social media fit the bill? Because I stumbled into something quite significant a moment ago. I think you put social media on exactly the same graph that you put nicotine and climate change denial. Things that the people that were making money from them utterly denied the evidence and the science of in order to carry on making money. So the tobacconists denied that nicotine was addictive, and the fossil fuel merchants denied that climate change was caused by them. And today we learn that representatives from Meta, Roblox and TikTok have all told MPs that their platforms are not inherently addictive to children and young people. Is that the same old story?
This is LBC.
There comes a time in your life when you need to make a change, to start a new chapter. It's time to consider a residential park home bungalow from Ecos Group. Castleview Court in Pevensey is a peaceful gated community for those aged over 45, set in a stunning location close to all local amenities. You can enjoy a stress-free move with up to 100% part exchange on your existing property with free site fees for your first year. Make that lifestyle change today and join us at our open weekend on the 25th and 26th of April at Castleview Court, Pevensey Bay, Pevensey. Or visit ecosgroup.co.uk. That's ecosgroup.co.uk.
In the Wren Spring Sale, you can get an amazing deal faster than you can say incredible value. Visit your local Wren showroom right now and get up to 60% off our high-quality, fully-built kitchen units and up to 7 years interest-free credit. Made for giving your kitchen a new beginning this spring. Wren, made for living. Offers apply when you buy 5 or more kitchen units. Finance subject to status and minimum spend.
Need anything from Tesco? Like 3 for £8 on selected Tesco finest picnic food, such as burrata with semi-dried tomatoes or whipped feta and tabbouleh.
Club card accepted.
Because every little helps. Majority of larger stores ends 11th of October. Club card or app required.
Yoni.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It is 22 minutes after 11. What is it exactly, and does social media fit the bill? Talking about addiction. Matthew's in Epsom. Matthew, what would you like to say?
Hi, I mean, it's so, for me, my experience, you know, I've been in recovery for coming up to 12 years now. Qualified counsellor.
Okay.
So I've been in and around this whole scenario for a very long time, worked with a lot of people in my experience and throughout my recovery.
Yes.
And see, for me and through my experience, it isn't the thing what's addictive, it's the reason, you know, the mindset. Why do we choose a certain path? Why do we choose social media? I mean, why do we choose alcoholism, crack, cocaine, heroin, gambling? You know.
So you're comfortable with the notion that social media can be addictive?
Absolutely. I mean, I've worked with hundreds of people.
Right.
And when we get to work with these people and the people that work with me, it goes so far beyond that. Now, for me, I can only talk of my experience.
Of course.
Working in prisons and rehabs. When we look to the deep root cause of it, root and branch, it was an escape. I chose alcohol and cocaine as my escape, although a beautiful upbringing, a wonderful family, everything was right in my path. But I didn't identify anything wrong with me. And then when I found this substance, which was that thing,
yeah,
it changed my reality. And I started to live in a false reality. And I lived in that false reality for a very long time. And it's the same thing with social media. I was speaking to the lady just beforehand. I remember, you know, I'm in recovery and my social media started to sort of come about. And,
yeah,
you know, I tried to, because I identify with addiction and alcoholism and whatever you want to call it, the mindset. When I used to take the laptops off my children, they used to go in an absolute meltdown, you know. And so I identify that as an addictive personality, an addictive nature.
Wow. Because they're I just want to try and build a bridge between those two universes. So, and it's really good that you're describing your own addiction without reference to trauma or anything. It was almost you stumbled into this alternative universe that you ended up preferring to the real one, but you weren't necessarily running away from trauma or pain or anything like that, which is why you were at pains to stress the health, the good health, the good nature of your background. And similarly, your kids are good kids, right?
Yeah, and, fantastic, yeah.
And yet something gets us, something grabs us, and they are then preferring in some way that what's happening in the world of the screen than what's happening outside the screen. And once you cross that Rubicon, once it's preferable, then you're in the foothills of addiction, aren't you?
Yeah, certainly, Damien, you know, you're in it. I mean, what we see on the screens is the world, is it? And it's like, it's the money, it's the fast cars, it's the beautiful apartments, it's the wonderful places they go abroad. They can live that in their home front room. They're escaping reality. And this is my experience with it. I mean, until we actually start really looking at it, why are we at that point? I mean, let's say 50% of people go on computers, you know, don't do it like that. They just go on it to enjoy it and they turn it off.
Yeah.
They turn it off. But if you'll notice over the last sort of decade, you know, a limited time on computers, it's become more and more. And the companies, and I'm not suggesting by any shape, may, you know, way or means that this is their intention, but the company, I think, know what's going on. It's all about money. It's all about how can they make it attractive to the children. And hence the reason, you know, we have an addictive... See, addiction doesn't label itself. It will attach itself. It will attach itself to anything.
And of course they're not going to admit it. Any more than the tobacco companies in the 1950s were going to admit that nicotine was addictive. Addiction is profit.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
Absolutely.
How worried are you then about this? I mean, given the work that you do, and wearing all your hats, Matthew, your dad hat, your counsellor hat, and your recovering addict hat, how big a threat do you think social media poses to the fabric of society, I was going to say?
Unfortunately, what I've seen, and, you know, I've worked with many, it's an unstoppable force. It's an unstoppable force, and the only way that it can be stoppable is by the people what present this force. Mm. And but again,
no, you've got to make it cost more to fix it cost less, you know, it's going to cost them more to carry on doing this than it is to stop doing it. And that's only something that governments can do, which is, of course, why, well, one of the reasons why Elon Musk likes to lie so blatantly and flagrantly about both freedom of speech and regulation of social media. Matthew, thank you. I'm going to read you something, actually, because this is where my privilege kicks in a bit. David's got in touch while you were talking, Matthew, and he said, this guy is brilliant. It's really interesting that I found it difficult to listen to him at first because he speaks just like me, i.e. common, but he is very smart. And I just read that, and my heart sank. I thought, why on earth would the way that someone talks make you think that it reflects upon their intelligence? But I just wanted you to know that you won over a lot of people. You impressed a lot of people while you were talking. I want to grab David by the ears and give his head a wobble. That's the language of forelock tugging and cap doffing. Jacob Rees-Mogg is as thick as mincemeat, but he sounds like Lord Snooty. Do not associate accent with intelligence. That way Brexit lies. James is in Mablethorpe in Lincolnshire. James, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, James.
So, you're asking for experience of addiction ourselves. So, much like your last caller, I'm a recovering alcoholic, 27 years. So, just trying to condense that, my experience all those years into a short amount of time. I was born to a drinking household, but probably much like yourself, in the late 70s and early 80s, is bringing up, that's how it was.
Sure.
So we drank at home. My parents drank. From school, we would go to the pub every Friday night from the age of 16, etc. And it was a normal thing. So there's a lot of heavy drinking going on. And some of those, some people develop problems and develop addiction, alcoholism, some don't.
That's another crucial element of this conversation, because there's no point sitting there thinking, well, I'm on social media a lot, I'm not addicted, what are they all talking about? It's a bit like saying, I had a pint last week and I'm not an alcoholic, what are they all talking about? Of course they both exist.
Absolutely. And I said, it's very difficult to find a single reason for that. I mean, it's complex solutions for complex problems as ever.
Yes.
Myself, I mean, obviously I've had a long, long time to think about it, and I guess a lot of it was about, I also came from a very high expectation background. I had four brothers, two of us became alcoholic, two of us didn't, who knows why.
Yeah.
But now, three are lawyers and I'm a doctor, you know, we did all right in the end. But I had a very, very harmful time, and I maybe nearly didn't make it, whatever, but I did do. And it's 27 years later, I said I've got a lot to think about in that meantime. So you say about social media. I think social media is more difficult than alcohol or cigarettes or whatever, because not saying recovery from alcohol is easy, it isn't. It took me a good 10 years to get to that space. No. But it's something you can remove from your life is the crucial thing.
Yes.
It's almost impossible to remove social media from your life now, from your work, from your social situations, everything, isn't it?
I think it is. Although, I left Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
And didn't really look back. I mean, I still enjoy Blue Sky, but the engagement levels are a fraction of what they were on. Yeah. I mean, the overall numbers. I'm just wondering whether you can. Can, are we sure? I mean, for a young person not to be on social media at all would probably be social death, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of my professional support network is social media also. Maybe a different kind of social media.
Well, yeah, WhatsApp isn't. I don't consider WhatsApp to be social media. The platforms I'm talking about are the ones that put stuff in front of you that you would have seen in your... Not just, like, chats and contacts. I think you could probably wean yourself off that. Probably.
Yeah, I guess. We're talking about Facebook Reels and TikTok.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, yeah,
well,
absolutely.
The three companies that said, it's not addictive at all were Meta, which is Facebook, Roblox and TikTok. Roblox is the one about which I know the least. So I don't think we're going to find anyone that disputes the idea that these platforms can be addictive, are we?
No, I mean, they would say that, wouldn't they, of course?
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I'm sure you're aware that Naomi Klein many years ago characterised large corporations like that as psychopathic. The reason being that their only responsibilities are to their shareholders and the law / regulation.
Mm. And ever since Reagan, the political weather has been, and Thatcher, has been about removing regulation. There's a new book coming out, actually, by Hetty O'Brien that speaks to that exact point from the point of view of venture capitalists, which are almost like the You know what, Naomi Klein? Are you talking? Is it No Logo, the book that you're referring to, or is it?
Yeah. It's No Logo. All those years ago, I'm saying 20 years. It might be longer.
I'm going to try and get Hetty O'Brien on the program to talk about her new book, which is an evolution of that process, and it's one of the things we talk about a lot on the show. And in many ways, the best example are the water companies, because the idea that a company that is in existence to provide us with water is poisoning our water is comical, really, from one angle, and inevitable from the other. And the angle from which it is inevitable is the angle to which James refers and which Naomi Klein wrote about, which is that that's what they exist to do. They exist to make money. They don't buy a water company because they love water. They buy a water company because they love money. They don't buy an old people's home because they love old people. They buy an old people's home because they love money. They don't buy a care home for vulnerable children because they love vulnerable children. They buy a care home for vulnerable children because they love money. They don't buy a chain of steak restaurants because they love feeding people or steak. They buy a chain of steak restaurants because they love money. They see absolutely everything that can be, that involves anybody anywhere handing over money. They just see it as something to be squeezed and squeezed and squeezed until it's dry. And that is what politicians who talk about deregulation or getting rid of red tape are themselves addicted to. They are in the business and often in the pockets of the people that want to make the money out of your water and make the money out of your care home and make the money out of your grandma's care fees. That's what they see. They only see money. They don't see people. They don't even see product. They just see money. And I'm never going to stop pointing that out, even if and when everybody can see it as clearly as I do. Dominic Ellis has your headline.
The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, is signing a new deal with France aimed at stopping small boat crossings. It'll cost £600 million, but some funding can be withdrawn within a year if the number of journeys don't come down. The top civil servant at the Cabinet Office has given evidence to MPs this morning about the vetting process of Lord Mandelson. Kat Little said she asked her Foreign Office counterpart, Sir Ollie Robbins, for access to the files in February, but he wasn't forthcoming. And London Underground services are expected to wind down in the next half hour ahead of another 24-hour strike. Members of the RMT union are walking out in their dispute over moving to a four-day working week. LBC weather dry and sunny for large parts of the UK. A warmer day, a high of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, this kitchen table office situation isn't working anymore. My home office needs to feel less making do and more CEO of my own corner.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
Exactly. A proper desk to spread out on, a comfy ergonomic chair and a stylish lamp that makes video calls a little brighter.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. So why wait to create the home you really love? Get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair app.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies in limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
It's hard to concentrate when you're worried about your health. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
At AXA Health Insurance, we build our teams with people who care. So when you need us, we're here to support you. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. Pre-existing conditions are not covered.
.org. James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
All roads lead to state corporate harm maximisation. A phrase I only discovered when I was writing a book, and for reasons that I can't fully remember, because it was, I think, my first book, I wanted to include fixed odds betting terminals. because they were a scourge. Two of the biggest things that are examples of state corporate harm maximisation that have happened in the years that I've been doing this job don't involve chemicals. They're talking about addiction. They involve people. The fixed odds betting terminals, known as the crack cocaine of fruit machines at one point, and the payday loan companies. Do you remember payday loan companies? Payday loan companies, in many ways, are the perfect example of state corporate harm maximisation. It doesn't have to involve addiction, but it is the systematic, and I'm going to read this from an Open University document because I want to get it absolutely right. The systematic production of social, environmental and physical injury resulting from, and this is the bit, mutually reinforcing collusive relationships between government and private corporations. So they will not stop doing bad things until it costs them more to carry on than it does to stop. Payday loan companies eventually got regulated out of existence in their most egregious form. Fixed odds betting terminals, the effort that the gambling lobbies put into resisting legislation on how big a stake you could make, how much money you could lose. That's collusion between corporation and business. If I were you, I would keep a very, very close eye on politicians cozying up to Bitcoin companies or to cryptocurrency companies. We've already seen in the United States some extremely sharp practice. But any UK politicians, the sooner a government, any government, introduces legislation to ban donations via cryptocurrency to political parties, or indeed the retention of the services of politicians by cryptocurrency companies, I'd watch that very, very closely. Because the examples of collusion between government and private corporation to minimize regulation, to protect consumers, is at the absolute heart of so many of the worst things that can happen to societies, up to and including social media platforms that we're talking about today. Because unless they're regulated, they will continue to cause harm. And the people who are profiting from the harm that they cause will continue to exist, that they're not addictive. But we know better. At least I think we do. Adam's in Chesterfield. Adam, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Hello, how you doing, pal?
All good. What's on your mind?
Good, man. I'm a bit nervous. Sorry, mate.
Don't be. It's only me. Seriously.
I know. I hear it. People say it all the time. What I wanted to put in, and that's... I'm coming from... Look, your other callers are absolutely 100% correct. As an alcoholic, and as, you know, someone who's played, you know, not yeah. played, but, you know, been addicted to other substances in the past.
Sure.
The difference between, like, so same as what you're saying, the gambling, with the difference in social media is that it's got the algorithm. The algorithm is what sets it apart. It's like having a cocaine dealer in your pocket.
Yeah.
All the time. You can't escape that. You know, if you're in the throes of cocaine addiction or alcohol addiction, you haven't got there's not a pub in your, it's not a self-replicating product. Whereas the algorithm, you've got your phone in your pocket. Most of us need it for our everyday jobs, et cetera, et cetera. But the algorithm is the difference here. And that's the point. That's the only point I wanted to make, really.
And it gets its claws into you early doors. I mean, time you take it out of your pocket, it's worked out what it is that is most likely to get an emotional reaction from you.
100%. Now, me and my wife are definitely both addicted to it. We both find ourselves doomscrolling. We haven't spoken for a couple of hours.
Wow.
And we're just, I'll be on people's comments on YouTube or something, just going through. I'm not even responding to it. I'm just like,
sure.
Same as your pal.
Been through what you've been through, then this is, I suppose, a much less dangerous addiction than the ones that you are recovering from. So
yeah,
it's an odd hierarchy, isn't it, of concern. But for children, that doesn't hold true at all. It's kind of robbing them of stuff that they're never, ever going to get back.
I never let my children use it when they were younger, and we were really, really strict on it. And they thank me as adults now, so they're a bit older. My youngest is 18 now.
Oh, that's good.
And they actually, I think they've come to a point now where some of them about around that age group They're pushing it away.
Yes, they are. I've detected. Yeah. Well, I mean, in our experience, they are. I haven't seen any research into broader societal trends. But the other really interesting thing is the number of kind of 18 to 25-year-olds who are all in favour of a ban on social media for under 16s, which doesn't feel like hypocrisy. It's more like lessons learned, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Look at the damage it's done ours. Thank you, mate. I don't know what you were nervous about. That was brilliant.
No, I don't know what I need. Your next book's definitely got to be How They Broke the Bloody Internet.
Do you know there are much, much better qualified people than me to write that one? But you're right. It would be nice to have it all assembled in one place. Thank you, Adam. Stay safe. 11:42 is the time. Sarah is in Lichfield. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello, James. Hello. I hope you're well. I'm another one, recovering alcoholic. I think all the recovering alcoholics sort of joining the dots with the line, aren't they, here?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, but although I was addicted to alcohol, to answer the actual questions you asked, I would define addiction as a compulsion to take part in a substance or an activity that you have no control over. You have an inability to control that compulsion. So it comes down to, basically, it's only my opinion, I think it comes down to the inability to self-regulate, which is transferable. So, for example, with social media, oh my God, of course it's addictive. It's screamingly obvious it's addictive.
And we've got age limits on every single thing we've talked about today, except social media. We've got age limits on gambling, we've got age limits on alcohol. Obviously, all drugs are illegal, but we've got age limits on nicotine, but we've got no age limits on social media. So you recognise that things are addictive. It doesn't mean you prohibit them entirely. Or obviously, you know, no one's calling for alcohol to be rendered illegal as a consequence of the people like you who end up suffering from addiction, but we never let children have unfettered access to any of these things legally.
Exactly, and I think it's, I do think there's such a thing as an addictive personality.
Yes, I think you're probably
in that,
right.
I tried social media, and I can't remember, sorry James, whether you were describing a friend or a caller who hadn't realised they'd been on it for...
It was my late friend. It was a friend who's no longer with us, actually.
A couple of hours. And I tried this, and I recognised my own pattern straight away. So I tried it, and I thought, oh God, yeah, next. And I thought, no, here we go. Well, I've just transferred it to something else, because it is transferable if you accept that it's a trait. But I still think, so I just switched it off. I'm not on any social media. And, but I do think it's self-regulation. And if I may, if you've got time, my parents are alcoholics. My entire family were alcoholics.
Right.
And in my family, it was spot the sober person as a child.
Gosh.
And it was kind of, I hated it for a while.
Yes, I'm sure.
Because I just thought it was like a zoo, you know.
Well, you're
not
safe
home.
As a child. You're not safe.
Well,
adults are supposed to make you feel safe, and they don't make you feel safe if they're drunk.
You come home from school, and it's either a party or they're chucking bottles at each other.
It's not ideal.
I think I could have had happier times somewhere else.
Of course.
But the one thing, if you think about this business of when people say, does it run in families?
Yeah.
Is it hereditary? Is it learned behaviour? Back to self-regulation, because the one thing being brought up by alcoholics that my sister and I weren't taught is any kind of self-regulation.
Gosh. Saying no to yourself, essentially.
So how many people ask their children, instead of saying to their children, that's it, 10 o'clock, you come off that.
Yeah.
Come on in now, that's ridiculous, it's 2 hours. It's interesting if you ask children, how long do you think it's reasonable to spend, how long would you like to spend on doing this? I'd say all day, which is normal, but sort of like when they get to a more reasonable kind of, sort of 14, 15, 16-year-old, it's quite surprising I occasionally ask kids, you know, how long, just out of interest, no judgment, how long do you spend on TikTok? They'll go, Well, I start off and I don't really intend to, but I kind of, I just do it till about 1 o'clock in the morning.
I wish I could limit myself more. I wish I could self-regulate, they're saying, aren't they?
But if so, that's, a, if,
it's
if
so
you
interesting.
Teach children about self-regulation.
And if you can't teach them, then you help them by having, you know, sort of technology attuned to stop, to have limits on how much they can. I know there's always way round and loopholes.
But you wouldn't let them burn themselves,
no,
would you?
Exactly. Kids can still pay someone else to get them cigarettes. No one says we should legalise cigarettes for children just because they can ask their cousin or you know, some adult walking past the newsagents to go and get. Just because loopholes exist doesn't mean you don't try your best to fix things. You're absolutely right. Do you remember?
Cause
the other
having
thing,
boundaries.
Yeah,
if somebody came at you with an iron,
with a
you
what?
Would immediately, if somebody came at you with something hot.
Oh, an iron.
And you were going to get burnt. You'd set up a boundary, wouldn't you?
Yes.
You'd say, don't come near me with that. But why is it? Because it's on this thing that, as the other gentleman said, it's in our pockets. It's instantly available. And it's the parents as well. The parents feel the embarrassment that they shouldn't feel
by
admitting to other parents that they won't let their child go on their mobile phone because they will be ostracised.
And then they feel cruel or they feel Victorian. And that's changing as well. And give the parents a break because they're moving. It's a moving bus that they're trying to jump on and off, you know. It's all of our parents didn't have to deal with this particular issue, although they had, as you've reminded us, some of them had issues of their own as well. So that was brilliant. Thank you so much for calling in today, and congratulations. Is that the right word to use on your continuing recovery?
Well, I like to think that it's great to be normal.
Yes.
that's almost
we're back to yesterday's show, aren't we, about grown-ups. But seriously, you're sounding in fine fettle, Sarah. It's a pleasure to listen to you. It's 11:49.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Richard, now Lord Walker, the boss of Iceland Foods, taken on the role as the government's cost of living champion. Simon in Sevenoaks in Kent. Simon, your question to Lord Walker. Richard Walker, good morning.
What do you make of Waitrose and Morrison's sacking of the security staff for tackling shoplifters?
I do think that needs to be a reality check on what is happening out there. You know, we lose 20 million quid a year on shoplifting, and it's not
Iceland. I have to say to you, that £20 million has got to be made up some way, so the price of my fish fingers presumably has to be increased.
Well, and this is why shoplifting is actually a cost of living issue, because that 20 million quid is not going to a dividend to shareholders or to profit. That's lost wages, lost investment in stores, and actually lost investment in lowering prices.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At Wickes, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5 litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
It's Munich, 1936, and all eyes are on the capital for the upcoming Olympic Games. As athletes fight for gold and the Nazis fight for power, Detective Sebastian Wolf faces a battle of his own in a search that will take him from high society to the city's darkest corners. Wolf is about to learn just how easily the hunter becomes the hunted. Evil in High Places is the gripping new historical thriller from the million-copy bestseller Rory Clements. Out now.
Search kayaks for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search kayak for great deals on car hire? Huh. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
This week with Lidl's Garden Event, you can reserve your ceramic Kamado barbecue for just £249. Claim yours through the Lidl Plus app and collect it in-store next week. Now we're cooking. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lidl-plus-terms. Offer ends 26th of the 4th, 26.
Noticed a change in your hearing? We'll get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It's 11:52. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, and I do think that this is significant. The parallels that we've drawn with other very, very profitable products from the past that the people profiting from went to great pains to deny the dangers of. I hadn't properly spotted it before, actually, but I hadn't read such a stark headline before. Executives from three social media companies have denied their platforms are inherently addictive to children and young people. And you sort of do a double take, don't you? You sort of do a double take. You sort of go, hang on a minute. Of course they're addictive. Everybody knows they're addictive. And then I found myself thinking, before we came on air this morning, who's the best person to ask? And then it struck me, the best people to ask are people who have been addicted to other things. Things that nobody disputes the addictive nature of. And lo and behold, everybody reckons that social media platforms are addictive. Lee speaks for many of you when he writes, the standard of your callers is once again amazing. You're absolutely right. Patrick, meanwhile, I think, has a lesson for everybody. He writes, now I feel bad because I interrupted your intro and totally missed your point. Well, there are two thoughts there. Perhaps if my intros were shorter, my point would be clearer sooner. But more importantly, don't interrupt me when I'm in the middle of a monologue. Because you won't know exactly where I'm going or what I'm going to say until I get to the end of it. That's all right. 11:54 is the time. Justin is in Purley. Justin, what made you pick up the phone?
Good morning, James. How are you doing?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
Social media. Is it addictive?
Yeah.
Yes, completely. I'm on social media. I'm a content creator on TikTok.
Okay.
And I can't leave it alone. Day and night, I'm on that. I'm also on Instagram. I'm on Threads. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm pushing social media left, right and centre. But I started with a few viewers on YouTube. Then I found TikTok.
I don't want to be rude before we continue the conversation, but this isn't an invitation to promote your account.
No, I'm not doing that at all. I'm not going to do that at all.
Just checking. If you're doing something like that, you're not just a I don't know, you're addicted to creating content as opposed to consuming content. Well,
I'm also addicted to the likes and the comments that I get as well, which is the other thing.
That's dopamine,
what you
isn't
get
it?
From it.
That is
exactly.
Dopamine.
That's the bit. I mean, the dopamine hit I get from getting several thousand people looking at what I'm doing or commenting on what I'm doing or liking what I'm doing, that drives me on. Every morning I get up and I check my numbers, see what's going on there, and I move forward from there, find out what worked, what didn't work,
According to the Sunday Times, the first thing I do when I get to work is check my numbers, but I'm happy to confirm that that's not actually true. But are you troubled by this? You don't sound necessarily too troubled by it.
I am a little bit, because it is an obsession. It's an obsession that is that's actually damaged a couple. I'm a private gardener as well, and it's damaged a couple of customers because they found me TikToking in their garden.
Oh, that's interesting. So, I mean, if they'd found you drinking in their garden or found you gambling in their garden, they'd be cross, and
they'd probably be all right.
Well, up to a point, I suppose, but they'd equally they don't want you to be doing things that they're not paying you to do while they're paying you to do something else.
Exactly.
Do you want to get off it?
That's a question, you see. I don't think so.
Well, then I don't know if you're addicted, or certainly if you are addicted, you haven't reached rock bottom, have you, if you don't want to get off it?
No, I haven't yet, no. No, I mean, I've had a turbulent time on social media with some of the comments I've got back and stuff, and it's kind of been a bit wild, but other than that, it's quite a nice ride at the moment.
Well, I'm glad you called, and I'm glad I didn't jump down your throat too violently when it looked as if you were just going to start bigging up your own content, because you're speaking from a different angle as both creator and consumer. But I'd forgotten about the tyranny of likes, as it were. And of course, that's all going to be relative. So if you've never had 50 likes before and you get 50 likes, it gives you a little boost. I mean, the politics we haven't touched on, the way in which the people are not remotely interested in whether stuff is true or not. They're interested solely in how many reactions it gets. Elon Musk has turned it into quite a lucrative business. Telling racist lies on Twitter is practically a career option now for some people. Ditto YouTube, I suppose, and other things. So that side of it, monetized and addictive, alongside the algorithm just constantly feeding you an unleavened diet of stuff that they've worked out you like. And of course, that stuff might not even be harmful. You might be addicted to pictures of fluffy kittens. If it gives you a nice warm feeling inside, you will keep coming back for more. At the point at which it becomes dangerous is the point that Justin's led us to, and that's not something that I can answer at the moment. It's not. Stephanie suggested it right at the top of this hour in a text that addiction rules your life to the exclusion of all else. I don't actually think that's true. That's what a functioning alcoholic is, isn't it? Someone who can outwardly appear to be absolutely fine, and yet there is a physical dependence upon alcohol. I think that a social media addiction is going to be clear to the person suffering from it and the people closest to them, but the fact that it's dangerous or damaging may not be immediately evident. Speaking of immediately evident, absolutely nobody correctly guessed the missing word around this hour. We began by asking what words are missing from this headline. Pilots rebuked for flying in blank blanks. And probably my inbox now is if I ask you a question at 11:05, by 11:55, there's no way I'm going to be able to find all the answers. That someone said wife's underwear, which I thought was a little bit Carry On Films. Some people got it, but they were clearly cheating because there's no earthly way that anybody correctly guessed the missing words in this headline. Oh, well done, Keith. That sounded deliberate almost. Pilots rebuked for flying in. You might want to cover the children's ears at this point. No, you don't. I'm joking. Penis shapes. That sounds like the world's worst pasta. Pilots rebuked for flying in penis shapes. That solves one mystery, at least, before we head upon or into Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to get answers to all sorts of other questions. And don't blame me, that was the headline in the news. Mystery Hour is a sort of radio equivalent of those newspaper columns where you write in with a mystery and other readers write in with an answer. The major difference being that it all happens in a single hour.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood is signing a new deal with France aimed at stopping small boat crossings. It'll cost £600 million, but some funding can be withdrawn within a year if the number of journeys don't come down. Riot police will also be sent to French beaches and there'll be extra drones and helicopters. But the Shadow Chancellor Samuel Strides told LBC News the plans don't appear robust enough.
What we need is real deterrence, which means the ability to remove people as soon as they arrive on our shores, and that's what our plan would do, stepping out of the European Convention on Human Rights, allowing us to send people straight back to the country they've come from, or a safe third country.
The top civil servant at the Cabinet Office says she had to request vetting information about Lord Mandelson directly from security officials. Kat Little said she asked her Foreign Office counterpart at the time, Sir Ollie Robbins, for access, but he wasn't forthcoming. Miss Little said she needed the files to inform Sir Keir Starmer whether the correct procedure was followed. Addressing the Foreign Affairs Select Committee this morning, Kat Little said Sir Ollie blocked her request.
In the middle of March, I have a meeting with Sir Ollie and a senior member of his team. And this is after the point that I've been told that this summary document exists. I specifically ask to see this document and any decision-making audit trail around those judgments at the time. It was made clear to me that that information would not be forthcoming.
Who made that clear to you?
Sir Ollie.
An arrest has been made as part of an investigation linked to Lucy Letby. The former nurse is serving 15 whole life orders for murdering 7 babies and attempting to murder 7 others between 2015 and 2016. Detectives are looking into claims of corporate manslaughter at the Countess of Chester Hospital where Letby worked. LBC's North West correspondent Chris Chambers has more details.
Cheshire Police have told us they've arrested one individual yesterday afternoon and carried out a series of searches as a result. Those searches have now finished. The individual concerned is being held on suspicion of perverting the course of justice. And they say the corporate manslaughter and gross negligence investigation continues with no set timescale for it to be finished.
The number of people diagnosed with cancer in the UK has reached a record high, with more than 400,000 new cases each year. Cancer Research UK says the increase is largely due to an ageing population. And commuters in London are facing disruption as the second 24-hour underground strike is just getting underway. Members of the RMT union are walking out in their dispute over moving to a four-day week, but TfL says the changes are voluntary. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 88 at 10,388. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, dry and sunny for large parts of the UK this afternoon. A warmer day, a high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Rotimi likes Pension B's modern approach to pensions.
I think Pension B has brought pensions into the 21st century, firstly through the use of technology. Signing up to the app is super simple. Pension B makes me feel very confident about my finances and makes me feel like I have a plan when it comes to my retirement.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12 is the time. Good Lord, Mystery Hour is upon us already. Well, I kind of knew that. I told you 5 minutes ago, didn't I? If you're not familiar with this part of the programme, I should warn you, it's rather different from the other 14 hours of the week that we could potentially spend together. 15, of course, if you include the podcast. More than that, I suppose, if you know me socially. I invite you to ring me with a question, a who, a why, a what, a win, a win, a when, a would, a win. I'll start again. I'll put my teeth in and try again. Thank you, Keith. You ring me with a question, a who, a why, a what, a when, a whether, a whither, or a wherefore. Not a whether, a whither. Even the occasional whence. And someone else then rings in with the answer. It may not sound particularly exciting, but it is. I promise you. Somewhere between those two points, where the question is asked and the question is answered, the magic occurs. The magic is in the margins. The magic's always in the margins, isn't it? And if you don't believe me, well, there's only one way to find out whether I'm telling the truth. It gets better. My favourite contributor of the week will win a Mystery Hour game. There are now two Mystery Hour games. So successful is this radio feature that it has spawned not one, count them, but two individual separate freestanding games. One, a traditional board game. One, a travel game. It's in a tin. You can pick, actually, which one you would prefer. You find out more about both of the Mystery Hour games at mysteryhour.co.uk. Full terms and conditions, because that's a proper competition with a proper prize, like what the grown-ups do. You can find the full terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk. And that's it, really. We used to try and police repetition and dullness, but frankly, they're both in the ear or the eye of the beholder. I don't like motoring questions, and I will get cross if motoring questions somehow slip through the net and get onto the programme. But other than that, fill your boots. Anything you're puzzled by, you've sort of looked at and thought, what's that about? Why do we do that? Sometimes questions, I wore a shirt yesterday. That's not the end of the anecdote. I wore a shirt yesterday and I noticed it had the horizontal buttonhole on the bottom button. It wasn't a dress shirt. It was from a rather splendid designer called Oliver James, actually. And it was a question last week. And I found myself thinking, oh, of course. Why is the bottom button horizontal? Why is the bottom buttonhole on a men's shirt horizontal while all the other buttonholes are vertical? And the answer is pressure. So you tuck in a shirt, the pressure is downward, whereas everywhere else on your shirt, the pressure is outward. It's like your chest, especially if, like me, you're stacked and you've got very well-developed pectoral muscles. You're bursting out of your shirt like Bruce Banner as he turns into the Incredible Hulk. So you...
Unhinged headline.
Was that deliberate? It's not just an alarm for lies, Keith. You can't just do that willy-nilly. But the bottom buttonhole, as we discovered last week on Mystery Hour, is horizontal because you're pushing it down. So the pressure is... Anyway, I digress slightly. Gives you an idea. So it can have silly stuff or serious stuff. We can have big... hotshot scientific questions, which have traditionally been answered by various professors, most famously Professor Hal himself, or it can be a very silly question that somebody will know the answer to, but you're dashed if you can work out who. Quick shout to Rachel, who played the game in a tin with her daughter last night, which is wonderful to hear. The word is spreading. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. Maya is in Liverpool. Maya, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Maya.
So I work in hospitality, and whenever we have a briefing before service, the chef will come out and he'll say, 86, the chicken. So we don't have the chicken anymore, we don't have it for this service. If we're mid-service, the bartender might go, 86, the Guinness, we run out. And I just want to know where 86 comes from. It doesn't really rhyme with anything, there's not really any other numbers in hospitality, and I just want to know where it comes from.
86. I bet it does rhyme with something.
Well, I was trying to think.
So am I now. I can't, because... 86, and so you use it as a verb. You say 86 the chicken, not the chicken is 86 or anything
It can be both.
Okay. It was David Banner, not Bruce Banner. My apologies for my last misspeak. Hang on. Okay, you're on. Yeah, you quite high-end hospitality, or does this hold true across all levels?
I work in, it's almost like a Michelin star pub in Oxshott.
How delightful. I thought it might be posh.
Is it the accent?
Not you being posh, because I've worked in, well, no, I can turn this quite happily back. I've worked in hospitality a lot, and I've never heard that phrase. But while the establishments I worked in were delightful, they were not anywhere close to Michelin star level. So I just presumed it was a bit higher end than the stuff that I had experience with. You're on. I like it. What does it mean? Why do we say 86 the chicken when we've run out of chicken in a restaurant? 0345 6060973. Do you know one of the most distracting and unnerving things about this job? I'm going to confide in you now in a slightly unprofessional fashion. It's when Keith and Eleanor start giggling hysterically at something. I know nothing. I have no idea what you're finding so funny on this occasion. That can be very... I think it's deeply unprofessional. I bet that never happens on the Andrew Marr show. And second of all, it distracts from the central brilliance of the programme. So now I'm going to have to wait while the words creep across my screen at an extraordinary slow pace to find out what it was they were laughing about. I asked Keith if he knows which hospitality establishment you worked in, and he replied, I don't know. He probably just took his glass back to the bar. That's actually very funny. Yeah, all right, lads. Calm down. I've got a radio show to present. Jeff's in Stockbridge. Jeff, question or answer?
I've got a question, James, please.
I bet, Jeff, I'm not putting you on the spot now. I bet there are people listening to this programme now who can name the hospitality establishment that I have worked at. There's more than one, because they pay more attention to the programme that I present than the actual producer and the... engineer do. I bet there are listeners who can actually name the establishments that I've worked in hospitality where they're too busy swapping rude jokes and mean jokes. Anyway, what's the question?
I've got a question for you. So it's about magazines. So yes. On the 11th of April, I subscribed to a magazine. It came through my door, the June edition.
Yes.
Why are magazines so far in front?
That's a good question, isn't it?
Why can't I have the April edition in April?
In April, why doesn't it arrive at the beginning of April? I should know this, really, having worked in the print media, but or at least it may have come up here before, but I haven't got a clue. I know you don't mention what magazine you subscribe to, Jeff. Is that because it's adult?
No, it's because it's banned on the programme, which is a motoring magazine. And you don't talk motoring.
Ah, you got me. You done me. So is this technically a motoring question? I don't think it is. Is it?
No, because it holds true.
You can give me a bit of leeway, surely. It holds true across all magazines, all periodicals. The beginning of April, you get the May edition or even the June edition.
No, it was a June edition.
Yeah, no, I know. No, it won't always be that far ahead, but it's always ahead. You never get the...
It is.
Yeah, I like it. I'll find out for you. Why are they so unhinged or detached from the actual calendar when you get the edition that's 2 months ahead of where you actually are living? Thank you, Jeff. Lovely answer. Lovely question. 12:11 is the time. Paul's in Chiswick. Paul, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Paul.
Okay, so does putting clothes that you've worn once back in the wardrobe materially affect their impact on the clean clothes that are already in there?
It seems unlikely, doesn't it?
It seems a bit unlikely, but I do have a really good reason for asking this. It's not just that I was listening yesterday.
Go on, what's the other reason?
But my wife has what she calls a shame pile.
Right.
And it's the clothes that are like that, that she won't put back in the wardrobe, but she doesn't think need
washing. These are her own clothes?
Her own clothes, yeah, sure. But she calls it a shame pile because it builds up over the course of maybe a couple of days, she'll eventually make a decision.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested to hear that other people suffer from this condition that I described on the programme yesterday. Mine is less of a shame pile, more of a... I discovered a word yesterday, Paul. It's more of a floordrobe.
I like it.
It's now a lovely portmanteau word.
Yeah.
But does it?
So shame attached to it.
And it was a genuine conundrum yesterday. Do you put them back in? Do you fold them up again and put them back on the shelves? Or do you do what Paul's wife and I do, which is leave them in an unsightly pile? Are you comfortable with this, Paul? Because my wife, I have to confide in you while no one else is listening, my wife doesn't like it at all. When I
kind of got used to it. I sort of nudge her to sort of like...
And what do you do with yours? What do you do? Like, a jumper is probably the most obvious thing, because you're going to wear a jumper again. You're not going to wash a jumper every time you wear it. What do you
do? Goes back with the other jumpers. That's fine. I don't mind about that at all.
So you hang it or you fold it?
Cardigans get hung, jumpers get folded.
And you do that? No, I like
it.
You've got a very similar wardrobe to me, I think, Paul. So you would... That's what I'm going to have to start doing. And what would be the reason not to do it? Answer, because you're worried that you might put some dirty clothes on, but then check whether they're dirty before you put them back in the pile again. I don't think there's going to be any negative impact of putting worn, clean clothes back with the freshly laundered stuff, but that's the question that's on the board. That little observation or description at the top of yesterday's show, I mentioned this to you earlier, got more reaction in my inbox, more texts and WhatsApps than anything we've done this week, and it's nearly over. It's me wanging on about my floordrobe and using it as a way into conversations about disillusionment with Keir Starmer. You'll have to listen back on catch-up to work out how on earth we managed to do that. Got more reaction than anything. In second place was the question this morning about American culture. 12:14 is the time. Roger is in Darwin. Roger, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
I've recently had an operation called an orchidectomy.
Oh.
And what they do is they basically remove a testicle out of you.
Right, that's what I thought it was.
And then I want to know, because I didn't ask, what colour for the ball that they put back in. And I'm glad you found it funny, because I have.
I have to ask this. Is there an answer you're really hoping not to get?
Well, I'm a Blackburn fan, so as long as it's not claret...
This is what I do. And is there an answer that you're... I mean, it's not going to be black and white stripes, is it?
I don't know.
Like a mint humbug.
Yeah. Of all the questions I was asking about what routine off and everything, I forgot to ask.
You didn't get... They don't show it to you in advance to, like... No. You know, so you get used to the feel of it in your hand.
Yeah, I was hoping it was, like, glow-in-the-dark or something, or emits a LED.
So, working on the principle, Roger, that they're all going to be the same, aren't we? That there's only one real option in this department.
Well, apparently they're all made of the same sort of silicone. I've learned that from someone who works in the NHS, but I would love to know from a surgeon who performs this operation on the team, what colour that they put in.
What colour is an artificial testicle? That's one of my favourite questions of all time, and I have a feeling you thought it might be.
Yep, and it's just to spread awareness, James, because I found a lump down there, and I went to the doctors, and they decided they need to cut it out to stop anything worse happening. So I'm glad I did it, and it's a message to everyone to just check your vitals, and if you don't...
Check your vitals.
Yeah.
Well, good man, actually. Great stuff. But that's funny and serious at the same time. The perfect call to a radio station. But let's get him an answer. What colour is his ball?
LBC.
Danzin.
Jensin.
Tom. Alice. Looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save one third on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
Southeastern. Fever Tree Mediterranean Tonic Water. Who are you? Usually the mixer. The tea in G&T. But your delicate fragrance, hints of lemon thyme, when the tea's this good. Do you even need the G? Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Lidl's Pick of the Week brings you great value on fresh fruit and veg. This week, get 50p off a pack of 6 British apples, now just 99p with Lidl Plus. And because we're so confident in our freshness, if you're not happy, we'll give you your money back. That's our fresh promise. Lidl, more to value. Offer valid 23rd to the 29th of April, subject to availability, selected stores, GB only.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
It is 17 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So, question so far. Why do chefs or in hospitality, why do you say 86 the chicken when you have run out of chicken? Why do magazines purport to be from the future? It's not quite how Jeff phrased the question, but so it's April and your magazine subscription arrives and it's the June edition. Why can't it just be the April edition? What's going on there? Does putting worn clothes back in with the clean clothes, is there any problem with that? Is there a reason why so many of us find it so hard to do? Is it probably just the laziness element of not wanting to fold it, isn't it? And what colour is Roger's artificial testicle? 03456060973. It's going to take some catching, Roger, isn't he, for the board game, I think. David's in Manchester. David, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, David.
I took my little girl to the park the other day, and we were blowing dandelions to tell the time.
Dandelion
and
clocks.
My wife, exactly.
Yeah,
and my wife said to me, what's that about? Where's that from? Like, what's the science behind that? What's the history of that? And I've got no idea. It's just something we've always done.
1 o'clock to, so it's like, I mean, when we were kids, we thought that you could actually tell the time by blowing it, and it, when you ran out of bits of spore or whatever they're called, that would be the correct time. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, is there any science to that? Like, is it
seems
most
unlikely,
likely
mate.
To release at 1 in the afternoon? I don't know. Random.
No, I don't know either. I like that question. It's a lovely thing to do, isn't it? It's a sort of a nice little sort of communing with nature, but also it's got a fun little childhood tradition to it as well. Why?
Practicing counting as well for a little one.
Oh gosh, of course I forgot that. That's a long dim end. My youngest turns 18 this week, David. You've got all of that. Oh, yes.
Got a lot of that to come.
Got a lot of stuff to come. 19 minutes after 12 is the time. I like that. What's the origin of that? Where does that come from? It doesn't immediately or obviously make sense. A rhyme might make sense or something. One for, you know, something, two for this. One, but what is it with the magpies? One for luck, two for joy or something. 19, don't at me on that. I need my inbox and I need my phone lines. Mark's in Swindon. Mark, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Mark.
So it's an answer to the 86 question in hospitality.
Oh, yes.
And I looked it up a while back. I've been in hospitality 25 years. I looked it up a while back because I was watching one of them god-awful food programs, American.
Oh, yeah.
And Gordon Ramsay uses it quite a lot.
Does he? On the telly? 86 the chicken.
I think it's a bit of a pretentious thing with chefs meaning to make themselves sound a bit more important.
An affectation, perhaps, which is why we didn't use it at the Brasserie in Kidderminster, because there was no affectation or there was no pretentiousness there, mate, on Lower Mill Street.
And there's no pretentiousness in any of my cafe bars, I can tell you that now.
Good.
So, it's supposed to be rhyming slang for 86, meaning Nick's.
Oh, Nick's the chicken. That's very New York, I think.
Yeah, and that's the point. It's an American thing. I looked it up a while back because I was trying to wonder
No, fair enough.
Hansel the chicken is any quicker than saying 86 the chicken. I can't get my head round.
86 the chicken.
Yeah.
What? How many cafe bars have you got?
Well, currently just the one.
Oh, okay.
We've had various over the years.
Would you like to have a free advertisement?
Well, it's the Great Western in Swindon.
Lovely
in,
stuff.
And it's actually more like a pub these days. But,
it's more like
the cafe bars were along the way.
They're not 86ing anything at the Great Western in Swindon. Nothing is 86. If they've run out of something, they've run out of something. No, the words 86 will not pass anybody's lips unless that's the total of your bill.
Quite right too, sir.
Love it. Have a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I hope Maya is happy with that answer. So it just means Nick's the chicken, as in there is none. I said it would probably rhyme with something, because nothing else made sense. Remember, if you're struggling to get through, Mark is about to vacate a phone line, which you will be able to grab by judicious use of redial. Helen is in Preston. Helen, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
I wanted to reassure the guy with a testicular prosthesis that it's not claret.
Testicular prosthesis will get you.
Oh, I know.
What's wrong with false ball?
Well, you know, I am a professional.
Okay, clearly. No, I'm clearly not. Go on, what do we know? What can we tell him?
So, Roger? They are normally kind of translucent. They look a little bit like a translucent little egg.
Yes.
That's what we normally put in adults, in sort of children cases, because their scrotal skin isn't as thick. They normally can have a bit of a pink tinge colour to make it look a bit... normal.
Yeah, a bit more real.
But an adult, it's kind of a clear egg.
Completely clear, like a window, or does it have a sort of...
Well, it's kind of translucent, sometimes a little bit sort of like...
Like a bouncy ball.
Yeah.
Like the kind of things you get in like a marble, but rubbery.
But rubbery, silicon.
That's what he said when he finished. He said, have you finished that? He said, oh, rubbery. That needs work. Qualifications?
I'm a doctor and I'm a GP now, but I used to be a surgical trainee, so I have done this operation.
You have witnessed it. You have held in your hand.
I've held it in my hand.
That is about as high a qualification as we can hope for. Thank you. Lovely work.
Thank you.
No, thank you. There you go, Roger. Relax. It's not claret. Don is in Barnet. Don, question or answer?
It's actually John, but Don will do for now.
Oh. How did you know I was talking to you? It could have been a John on another line. Was it the Barnet?
I don't know.
Well, I was. They wrote Don on the screen, but it could have been a John on the other line, and you'd have been talking to nobody. But I could have John in Barnet and a Don in Barnet on the same screen. It could happen.
True. Fair enough.
But
fair
it didn't.
Enough.
Go on. Question or answer?
No. Okay. Question. As a human race, when and how and what made us start laughing? What was the first thing that made us as a human race begin to laugh? Was it a tickle?
How are we going to know that?
Well, that's what I'm asking. That's why I'm ringing in.
Well, I didn't know. I mean,
I'm asking. That's what I'm asking. It's a mystery hour, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is mystery hour, but it's not like miracle hour. What do you mean? We just go back to the first time someone started laughing and work out what they laughed at?
Well, I don't know if there was research done as to what makes us laugh, and I don't know.
Well, I'm trying to think of a question that might get an answer. Because, I mean, you're all, in a way, it's always like, what was the first joke?
What was the first
joke? You've probably heard it on this programme. I think other animals laugh. Other mammals laugh, I think. I think they do.
Yeah, but how do we know that?
They're not
amused.
And if
we know how they know that, they know...
I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, don't worry.
Yeah,
they know to do that. They do that, don't they? I will try and find out for you. Why? I mean, is the question, why do we laugh?
No. What made us laugh in the first place? Like you say that animals laugh. So how do we know they laugh? And what is it? What's the research or the evidence that we know that animals laugh? I mean, does my cat laugh?
Yeah, was it a tickle? We're never going to get an out. Was it a tickle? What are you on about? I mean, someone slipped over probably. I don't know. Could you imagine being there the first time someone laughed? Like you walked into the cave wall or something like that, and everybody else
you
took.
Bumped your head, and, and then they said, "What?" And everyone was wondering what this funny noise was coming out there. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll see what I can do. Well done.
Thank you.
No, thank you. What was the first laugh? I don't even know. I've lost it again now. I just had it. I had the question. It was there. I was holding it in my hand like a prosthesis. What was it? Testicle. What did we love to? Oh, Fraser's in Glasgow. Fraser, question or answer?
I have a question for you, James.
Carry on.
When a footballer takes a corner kick,
yeah,
they always raise their arm before they take the kick.
Yeah.
Why do they do that?
They're telling the other lads or lasses which kick they're going to take, because they're not just holding a hand up in the air. There will be a language of fingers.
Well, you would think so, but they all do it. It's not just occasionally.
No, but they've got a choice of corners. So in training, you practice, say, four corners. And then you hold your arm up to tell them which one you're going to take.
Mm.
What do you mean, It's obviously the correct answer.
I don't think so.
Back post, near post.
So...
We're not live on TikTok. I'm doing this live.
I don't think that's the answer.
Well, I mean, I'm loath to leave it on the board because I'm so obviously right. But I will, because I'm a very modest man.
Okay, Fraser. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. Why do corner kick takers put their arm in the air before they take a corner? Okay, thank you, Fraser. If you can answer that, give me a call. 0345 606 0973. Oh, no. Really? We got a steward's inquiry on the 86, which I'm 99% confident was actually the correct answer. Hang on a minute. Dan's in Gravesend and Steve's in Derby. All right, lads.
You're right. Hi there.
Dan, you go first. What's your answer to this question?
So I've heard two stories, but the one that I am kind of more akin to is that there was a story, and they're all kind of, there's no factual answer, but they're all stories as to why it makes sense.
Right.
The story that I've heard is that in a weird tale, someone someone fell out of a window on the 86th floor.
Right.
So it's gone. He's gone.
Yeah.
But when it comes back in on shift, if it does come in back in shift, the same story says that a gust of wind blew that same gentleman on the 68th floor. So it comes back in when he came back in. So 86, what? He's gone. Gust of wind blew him back in. 68, he's back in.
Well,
so qualifications? So I've been chefing for a fair few years, both in the likes of... I was asked what restaurants, but I'm not sure if I'm allowed to...
Yeah, you are.
So Harvesters and TGI Fridays and...
And where were you when you first heard this, do you think? Which one were you in when you first heard this about...
I was in the American industry of TGI Fridays.
Okay, stay there. Steve's in Derby. Steve...
Yeah.
Why did you pick up the phone?
Well, I've got to agree with the guy that's on, because I used to work for TGI Fridays 25 years ago, and that's exactly the same story that I was told and has learned. So, yes, it's unbelievable. I'm not sure there's any factual evidence.
I think someone in the training department at TGI Fridays made this up.
Well, probably. I'm thinking they might have done, actually, really. But,
what branch were you in, Steve?
I worked in Nottingham and Sutton Coalfield.
Dan?
So Southeastern, you know, Bilwater and the likes.
This is nonsense, gents. Someone fell out of a window, so they named chicken after him.
No, it's not chicken. It's anything else.
He fell out of a window, so they suddenly said, when we've run out of something, let's all say 86 in the future.
Yeah, and then when it blew
what
back in...
What do you mean, yeah?
It
and he blew back in on the 68th floor?
That's it. No, I've also had a more bleaker story where a coffin is apparently standard size as 8x6 or along the lines of that, and it's dead. But that's the less fun version.
Okay, I'm sticking with Nick's. 86
no.
Nicks. Yeah, but do you mean no, like I'm stupid? You think someone fell out of the 86th floor and blew back in on the 68th floor, and somehow the whole world of catering decided that henceforth when they ran out of something, they'd say 86, and when it was restored, they'd say 68. It makes no sense at all. If one of you had rung in with this, you wouldn't have got on, because I'd have thought you were mad. But there's two of you.
Yep. Surely there's got to be a question. If it's 86 nicks is a Cockney slang, but it's an Americanism. How does that make sense?
Rhyming slang's not confined to the Cockneys.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone else...
Yeah, there's New York rhyming slang's a well-known thing.
Yeah, but is it a barbershop quartet, isn't it, for the Americans?
A nicks, a six, an 86. And who fell out of the window then?
Well, what's the rhyming slang for 68 then? Is it where it came from?
Who fell out of the window?
It was a gentleman. He was very light, though. It was a gust of wind that blew him back in. He wasn't very heavy.
How have two people rung in with the same insane answer to the question? Oh, it's going to turn out to be true now, isn't it? I know it's going to turn out to be true.
Surely. I think it needs a...
VAR on that. It blew back out again. All right, I'm going to give you both a round of applause, but frankly, I'm not sure either of you deserve it. That's great stuff. 12:31 is the time. Matthew, it's got your headlines.
In the last few minutes, the Prime Minister has told LBC his political opponents are making further allegations about the Mandelson scandal because they are opposed to what this government is trying to achieve. It comes as the top civil servant at the Cabinet Office tells MPs she asked her Foreign Office counterpart for access to files about Lord Mandelson's vetting, but he wasn't forthcoming. Riot police will be sent to French beaches as part of efforts to stop small boats crossing the Channel. The Home Secretary is signing a new agreement with France worth over £600 million if migrant journeys come down. And a person's been arrested on suspicion of perverting the course of justice as police continue to investigate baby deaths at the Countess of Chester Hospital. Operation Duets looking into allegations of corporate manslaughter and gross negligence manslaughter at the neonatal unit where Lucy Letby worked. LBC weather, dry and sunny for large parts of the UK, a warmer day but chilly along the east coast, a high of 8 to 20 degrees.
This is LBC.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip
weight
is,
loss?
I no, forget that. You just have
keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:35 is the time. How many buildings even have 86 floors? A lot of you are wondering. Seems to me something I should have been wondering 5 minutes ago. 10 minutes ago, this blue skyer, who goes under the name Daddy Needs Coffee, contacted the programme with reference to Helen, who he describes as the testicle doctor lady. But we all know what he's talking about. And he writes, can you ask that testicle doctor lady if you can get a prosthetic gonad with a squeaker in it like a dog's toy? I said to Keith during the break, do you think we're all right? And to Eleanor, is it all right if we read this one out? That's not too fruity, is it? And Keith said, why would you want one? And then there was a pause. And he said, oh, yeah, you could use it like a bicycle bell to get people out of the way when you're walking down the pavement. James is in Hackbridge. James, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer for you.
Carry on, mate.
I mean, I'm only just going to corroborate what you said earlier.
But it's the football question.
The football question, yes. So basically it's players giving signals to their teammates so that they know exactly where they're going to put the ball so that they can go and attack it.
I think Fraser probably is feeling a bit foolish now, don't you? Because once it's out, because it's often like this with questions, is that you can't work out what the answer is, and as soon as you hear it, you sort of slap your forehead, you know, and go, oh, of course it is. It must be. What else could it possibly be? It's waving at his mum in the crowd. Qualifications?
I've worked in non-league football for about 15 years and been going to matches since I was four as well, so I'm quite well versed, I think.
That'll do. Round of applause for James.
Thank you.
Lovely stuff. And up with non-league football. 12:30, and come on, kiddie, in the playoffs. 12:36 is the time. Jason is in Guildford. Jason, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Haven't you got work to do?
I'm in Guildford on a story.
Are you on a job? This is Jason Farrell of Sky News. I recognise his voice immediately because we were out together on Friday night. Go on then, what's the answer?
That was a good concert, wasn't it?
It was an amazing concert, yeah. I've got news, by the way. I'll tell you when I see you.
Okay. So the answer is on the magazine story that they put them out early because they work out their circulation and readership figures from Parson. So how many people then read, not just the person who subscribes to the magazine, but then how many people read it afterwards?
Ah.
And that can take sort of several weeks, and it can sit in a, you know, your dentist's office or whatever. So in order to increase it, it makes it feel more relevant if 5 weeks down the line you get the magazine from your mate and it's still in date.
Is that the reason?
That's what I was told. I used to work for Ski Magazine. We used to bring out our December edition in October. I mean, it's also, you know, it also means that, like, people booking their holidays and stuff like that can see, you know, they're seeing where they're going and they're reading about it. And sometimes they're trying to get ahead of the season. But a lot of it's down to it still feeling relevant.
It's up to date for longer. It's actually, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
So even if it's Roger's, Jeff's motoring magazine, and someone picks it up a couple of weeks after it's arrived, they're not going to put it back down again because it's out of date.
Yeah, whereas where Jeff feels like he's ahead of the curve.
Love it. Qualifications?
No idea.
I did used to work
for Ski Magazine.
Which Ski Magazine?
It's called Ski and Board for the Ski Club of Great Britain.
I had no idea. This was before you scaled the dizzy heights of Sky News.
Before I even did a journalism course, yeah.
Right. So you're suggesting that you did not need a journalism qualification to work for Ski and Board magazine?
I used to know stuff about skiing. That was enough.
Round of applause for Jason Farrell. Now, what can I ask what story you're on, or is it top secret? Are you undercover?
He's undercover. Yeah, I can't tell you, actually. No,
quite right, too. There you go. Proper journalism. I've never done any of that in my life. 12:39 is the time. Ben's in Hastings. Ben, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on, Ben.
Hello. I live in Hastings, obviously, and famously on Bexhill seafront, when the tide goes back, there are dinosaur footprints. There's about four or five dinosaur footprints. You can quite obviously see they are footprints, and it's famously known that that is what they are.
Yeah.
And my son, we were walking down there, and we went and had a look at them at the weekend, and then my son said to me, how comes, where are the rest of them? Like, he's obviously walked in and he's walked away, but there's just these five sitting here, but there's no other footprints anywhere else. Like, these tracks coming in or his track coming out, why are they stayed there and stored and none of the others?
It's a good question from the boy.
I thought so. I was quite proud of him. Is it going to be
clay? So they were walking on sand and then there was a bit of clay and then they walked on sand again?
Well, I hope not, 'cause that makes me look silly now, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. Yeah, doesn't. I'm thinking out loud. I might have said something silly already, but there are five distinct footprints in the... What is it? Yes. I mean, it must be... Oh, so it's stone, is it?
You are a little bit right. You walk out on the sand, it's all quite sandy when the shore goes back.
Yeah.
And then it's all a bit rocky and a bit... Like, it's not clay, it's very hot. It's obviously, it's like stone, you couldn't hit
it. But it was clay once, probably.
Yes, potentially so, yeah.
It's still, an interesting discovery, so we'll wait for someone to go definitive.
unless I answer it now and say it is Clay, and then I get a round of applause.
No, it doesn't work like that, Ben. Absolutely not. What's your boy's name? Should we give him a shout for when he listens to this later?
Yeah, Leo.
All right, Leo. Great question, mate. Keep asking questions, even if it gets on your dad's nerves. Always, always ask questions. It's the most important thing a human being can do. Nice one, Ben. Take care, Leo. Stephen is in charge. Stephen, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
But to paraphrase Salt and Pepper, let's talk about sweat, JB.
Baby, J-O-B. Carry on, then.
When you sweat, as far as I'm aware, the actual system of cooling you down, it's not the moisture coming out of your skin, it's the process of it evaporating from your skin.
Yeah.
So when you exercise, are you better off constantly wiping away the sweat to allow more moisture to come out and evaporate, or to let the natural process take over and just allow it to evaporate? Which cools you down better?
That's a good question, actually. It's quite technical, really, isn't it? Mm. So, I mean, if you're running a marathon or something like that, it could be quite helpful.
Well, to a certain extent, if you're out on a bike and you're moving quite quickly, then, you know, the moisture doesn't build up. It evaporates very quickly. And and as soon as you slow down and go uphill, you notice it quite quickly. You heat up and the moisture...
Yeah, if you want to cool down, if you want to maximise the cooling process, do you wipe sweat off or do you leave it on your skin?
Yes.
That's a really good question, mate. I love
that. Thank you very much. It's troubled me for years.
Has it really?
Had the opportunity to ring you, yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Let's hope you get your answer after that build-up. What is the best thing to do for maximum cooling efficiency? To wipe the sweat away as you exercise or to let the sweat drip? Let it drip. 12:42 is the time. Eddie's in Manchester. Eddie, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
When I'm washing up and wiping the sides down, why is it seems that a dishcloth is more absorbent when it's wet than when it's dry?
What? How often do you wash up?
It depends who you ask. If you ask my wife, it might be a bit less than I do. But 2-3 times a week.
Okay, no, it's all right. It's a numbers game. It's not when you're drying the dishes that it's more absorbent.
No.
You mean when you're wiping down the tops?
Yeah, like these microfiber...
Yeah, but it's not absorbent, is it? Because you're not drying the tops. It's just it's better at cleaning the tops because it's wet. Because the...
If it's wet, if you spill something, I find that it absorbs or takes away more moisture or wetness than if it's just dry.
Really?
I think so. I mean, it doesn't work like that way with a towel when you have a shower, I don't think.
No, it doesn't. But you think these microfiber cloths, there's a level of dampness.
They're more effective when they're moist.
The moist towel is a more effective dryer-upper than a bone-dry towel.
I think so.
That's not impossible. But we don't use microfibers. I've got a sponge.
A sponge?
A sponge, yeah.
Must be a southern thing, that, I think.
What, a sponge is a southern?
No, to wipe the surface, the side.
What do I do the surface with? No, I'd use a tea towel for the surface. But then if it's all dry, then I'll get... Oh, I've got a normal dishcloth. So you do the dishcloth on the like a normal one, like it's ropey, isn't it? It's not microfiber. You know, like your mum's dishcloth. It's got that old fashioned.
No, to be fair, we do use a sponge for the actual washing of the dishes.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. So if I want something wet out of the sink, I've either got the dishcloth or the sponge, and then I'll do the top, I'll do the surface, and then I'll use the tea towel to dry it off afterwards. But I like this. So it's the micro. It's a specific about microfiber. Your question.
Yeah, I clean it or dry it ish, let it naturally dry.
I like it. Yeah, is it? Well, it's got an increased surface. Well, someone will know the answer to this, I hope. And it may be that we're both bonkers and that it doesn't do a better job at all. But a bone dry microfiber is a less effective dryer upper than a moist microfiber. Why? 0345 6060 973. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Your taxes are going up faster than other workers in similar economies. Do you struggle to be proud of your English identity? And another new deal on Channel Crossings.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. For
From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
my weight loss.
Weight loss?
I...
No, forget that.
You just happen, keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Fever Tree Ginger Beer. There's no one quite like you, is there? That fiery character. Warming undertones. Mixed, you make a spirited Moscow Mule. But even on your own, you still have the most delectable kick. Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
This week with Lidl's Garden Event, you can reserve your ceramic Kamado barbecue for just £249. Claim yours through the Lidl Plus app and collect it in-store next week. Now we're cooking. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lidl-plus-terms. Offer ends 26th of the 4th, 26.
The following is from TfL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled out my name in tea lights and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings next to the lamppost where I got killed by a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
This always happens when I forget to do the guarantee, doesn't it? The funniest mystery hours always happen when I forget to say at the top that there is a guaranteed laugh out loud moment at some point in the next 55 minutes. If you haven't had a laugh out loud moment in the last 55 minutes, then God knows what you've been, or the last 45 minutes. Goodness knows what you've been listening to, but it can't possibly be this show. Questions that still need answers. I don't think Paul was expecting an answer necessarily, but I would love to know if there is one. When you put clothes that have already been worn but aren't yet ready for the wash back in the cupboard or back in the wardrobe, is there any deleterious or negative effect? Where does the dandelion clock come from? Blowing the dandelion clock, the spores off it, like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Where did that come from? John's question about laughter, which is quite hard to articulate, but he sort of wants to know why we laughed the first time we laughed. And his question was, did someone get tickled? There is a question in there somewhere. I have failed in my attempts to clarify it. But if you can answer it anyway, then crack on. We've done the football question. The footprints question at Hastings Beach. There are only 5 footprints. Dinosaur. What was it? Bexhill Beach near Hastings. 5 dinosaur footprints. Just how did that happen? I think we know, but can someone confirm it? Ideally a geologist. And when you are exercising, if you want to minimise the cooling effects, should you leave the sweat on your brow or should you wipe it off? Or indeed any other part of your body? And why do damp microfiber towels appear to be more absorbent than bone dry ones? We're all there now. Jonathan's in Chester. Jonathan, question or answer?
It's an answer, James, to the sweating question.
Carry on.
I thought the question was if you want to maximise the cooling, so I'll answer that way round, and yes, the opposite is true the other way. So
okay. The
answer is to leave the sweat on your body, because the cooling effect of sweating comes from evaporation of the sweat.
And so the more sweat you've got, the more evaporation there's going to be.
Well, the heat to evaporate comes from your body.
Yes.
So your body is giving up heat and therefore reducing in temperature. And this is why when it's humid, even though it's the same temperature, when it's humid, it's much more difficult for that sweat to evaporate because the air is already holding a lot of moisture. So it's much more difficult for sweating to cool you down the more humid it gets.
So if If it's humid, should you wipe the sweat off?
It's up to you whether you wipe it off or not. The sweat is going to drip off you and accumulate on you. So this is why, you know, if you're exercising and it's humid, your clothes will become soaking wet and you become covered in sweat. But you're not getting the cooling effect because the sweat is not evaporating.
I see. But in normal circumstances where the sweat would evaporate, you shouldn't wipe it off if you want to maximise the cooling
effect. If you want to maximise your cooling, don't wipe it off.
Great answer. Qualifications?
I'm a chemical engineer, and evaporative cooling is a kind of fundamental principle in that.
That's a sensational answer. So people think I exaggerate sometimes when I talk about the quality of qualifications that some people bring to Mystery Hour, but you've just said, "Yah, boo sucks to them, Jonathan."
thank you, James.
I thank you for it. Lovely stuff. There you go. Great answer. Really good answer. Bill's in Maidenhead. Bill, question or answer?
James, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
All right, mate. I'm calling about the 86 question, and I couldn't figure out whether or not it was answered properly.
Well, it's a very good point, nor could I.
So I can answer it.
You reckon? That's fighting talk.
I reckon I can answer it, yeah, from experience.
Have you ever fallen out of a building?
Okay, it comes from America, and it comes from the desire to control the level of alcohol intake when people were making their own alcohol out in the woods. You know, the moonshine and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was totally out of control in the 19th century. And there was no regulation, none of that. And so it became known that the level of alcohol in whiskey would be the damager of one's attitude, behavior, health, etc.
Yes, yes.
And so the desire was to control the level of alcohol that was legal to produce in legal whiskey, not the moonshine illegally in the woods.
Okay.
Although it applied to that as well, because all of it then got regulated. And the number and proof, if you will recall, is double the alcohol content of whiskey.
So double 43.86.
Exactly. So 86 is 43% alcohol, okay?
Yeah.
And somehow the number, and they were using this proof idea somehow, I don't know how, and somehow it then got agreed that the number we're going to settle on is 86. So you could not make whiskey above 43% alcohol.
Why did that become shorthand for things you've run out of in the kitchen?
Any bottle of whiskey that was legally produced, and of course whiskey is produced under law.
Yeah.
And
I think you've answered a different question. You've answered a different question.
I'm just explaining how the word 86 goes. Oh, sorry. And then it became an expression.
Oh.
And so when you're 86.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We used to play jokes with this when we were in bars as college kids.
Right.
And somebody got over the top. We'd tell the bartender to 86 him.
To chuck him out?
No, just to cut him down.
Okay.
Turn him off or cut him down. And there wasn't anything legal that was over 86 proof.
Wind him in. Qualifications, Bill. Yeah. What are your qualifications?
I'm just an ex-university student from America. I'm 82, 3 years old, living in England, 45 years.
Have you ever worked in TGI Friday?
No, I have not. I listen to you. I have no time.
That's all the education you need. Have a round of applause on me, Bill. That's a lovely answer. I think there's a million. Who knows? But I like that one. It's better than the other one, but arguably not necessarily as good as the first one. Matthew's in Southampton. Matthew, question or answer?
It's actually a steward.
Oh, for God's sake. Everyone's at it this week. What do you want to whine about then?
It's on the publishing question.
You can't argue with Jason Farrell. He works for Sky News.
The answer is a lot simpler.
Go on.
So the magazines can stay on the newsstand a lot longer.
Until the next one arrives.
Yeah. So it all originates back from comics in the States.
Oh.
Back in like 1930s.
Yes.
Because they were quarterly, and they wanted to keep them on the newsstands longer, they would actually put the next quarter on the date, so it's still on the newsstand.
So it's a variation on Jason's answer, or an improvement on Jason's answer. It is about extending the life, if you like, not just the shelf life, but the reading life of the magazine, in a way. But originally, the shelf life. Qualifications?
Used to work in a comic shop.
Really? I bet that was fun.
Oh, yes. Best job ever.
Yeah, I can imagine. Have a round of applause, Matthew.
Thank you.
12:55 is the time. Tiago is in Bristol. Tiago, question or answer?
Oh, hi, James. I think I have an answer.
Carry on.
It's regarding the microfiber cloth.
Yes.
So, in principle, the dry cloth will always win.
Ah.
Because microfiber is designed in a way that it have, you know, the split fibers, and those tiny fibers, it is what to do the so-called capillary action.
Yes.
Which seems to draw, you know, the moisture in.
Yes.
Now, what trips people off is sensation overall. And one thing that a lot of people oversee is that they often wash their cloths with the normal washing.
Yeah.
And if you use fabric softener, that creates a very thin layer of silicone on the fabrics.
Oh, really?
So when you get a fresh cloth that's just been washed,
wow,
the absorption rate might be affected by the silicone. And it's not until you rinse it, perhaps we're washing up liquid, that it breaks that barrier, and then it goes into kind of full absorption mode.
Wow. That makes perfect sense.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, but would you put fabric softener in the washer? Is there you wouldn't use fabric softener, would you, if you were washing your dishcloth? You just chuck them...
Ideally, no. I get quite triggered by the smell and the sensation of it, so I don't use it.
Oh, okay.
I sporadically, very kind of like baby safe ones. But towels, for example, we sabotage ourselves all the time by washing our towels. We want the fluffy, but the fluffy doesn't dry. What dries you is that kind of hardened, dry towel that will absorb the moisture. So
fluffy, if you've used fabric softener, the best thing to do if you want a fluffy towel is to put a tennis ball in your tumble dryer.
Oh, yeah, I heard about those things. I never tried them.
It's true. I've tried it. I've done it.
Yeah. It makes sense. It beats the fiber open.
Yeah, it kind of rubs it, agitates it. It's a nice one. Qualifications?
Just a very curious mind, James.
You and me
had
both.
The same questions before, and I was like, why? How?
Yes.
And I just looked it up and did my test.
Here we are. Another round of applause for Tiago. Lovely work.
Thank you, James. Thank you.
For the avoidance of doubt, you are allowed to look things up in the past. You just can't look things up on the day of Mystery Hour. That's the only rule, because otherwise we'd never know anything, would we? If you're never allowed to look things, you can't ring me if you've ever looked it up. That would be a silly rule. I don't know if you were listening yesterday, how close I came to asking someone if they had a phone while they were on the phone to me. That was such, I was devilishly close. Eva is in Borehamwood. Eva, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Eva.
The laughter is first recorded about 4,000 years ago in the Bible. Abraham's wife, Sarah, she called her son Isaac because she laughed that she was going to have a child because she was 90 years old.
What does Isaac mean?
Isaac means laughter.
It does mean laughter. So that he was called Isaac
as a
very funny.
To the shock.
I like that. I mean, that is probably enough of an answer for John. But I think,
I
suspect that the late, great Desmond Morris, who passed away this week, would probably be able to go back further than 4,000 years in pursuit of laughter, possibly up to and including great apes. Qualifications?
I'm a rabbi's wife. I've been teaching community nearly 30 years.
Love it. And a big round of applause for Eva, please.
Oh, thank you.
And brought us in almost bang on time, Eva. And sadly, not quite enough to win the board game, because I think that Roger... the happy beneficiary of the orchidectomy, and of course, as his contribution included a reminder to all men listening to check for lumps. To check for lumps. I'm not describing how Sheila Fogarty takes her tea. Check for lumps.
I'm extremely fussy about my tea.
Indeed you are. What a wonderful mystery hour that was. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinion. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from this show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick coming up at 4. But now on LBC, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
I didn't wonder where you were going with that. I'm not going to lie to you. Give me a bit of a fright. But anyway, I thought, I'm not doing a Nick Ferrari. I'm not. Thank you, James. Have a great afternoon. I'm going to be joined at 2:30 by Andy Hughes, our crime correspondent, and Emily Maitlis of the News Agents, to talk about what Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's senior protection officer has told LBC. Also, the news broke the last hour or so that a senior boss who worked at the hospital when nurse Lucy Letby murdered 7 babies has been arrested themselves, don't know if it's male or female, on suspicion of perverting the course of justice. We'll keep a close eye on that. Going to start, though, With your cost of living, bad news from the OECD today about taxing you. We're taxed more heavily than many comparable countries. What's it making you feel like?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, ministers are insisting a new deal with France aimed at stopping illegal small boat crossings will be effective and value for money. More than 600 million will be spent on deploying riot police to French beaches, along with new kits such as extra drones. But 100 million could be withdrawn if the French don't stop enough migrants. Former Tory government special advisor on immigration, Claire Pearsall, has told LBC she has reservations.
They suggest that if they don't stop enough people crossing the channel, then that money will be stopped after a year. What is that number? We don't know any of these details. So it's all very well going off to a lovely signing ceremony, but it doesn't actually make the results going to be any more achievable than the Conservative years.
The Prime Minister's told LBC his political opponents are making further allegations about the Mandelson scandal because they are opposed to what this government is trying to achieve. He spoke to us in the last hour on a visit to Newcastle.
Last week, my political opponents were saying that it was inconceivable that a civil servant wouldn't have provided the security vetting information to me. Turns out they were wrong. Then they accused me of dishonesty. Turns out they're wrong about that. Now, my political opponents, by which I mean the Tories, Reform and all those other parties, are going after any allegation they can.
It comes after the most senior civil servant at the Cabinet Office told MPs officials at the Foreign Office refused to share security checks on Peter Mandelson with her. Despite that, Kat Little believes due process was followed in the vetting process for his appointment as ambassador to Washington. A person's been arrested on suspicion of perverting the course of justice as police continue to investigate baby deaths at the Countess of Chester Hospital. They're looking into allegations of corporate manslaughter and gross negligence manslaughter at the neonatal unit where Lucy Letby worked. The details of 500,000 members of the UK's health data project have been listed for sale online in China. Biobank collects data from volunteers to learn who falls ill and why, so scientists can explore prevention and treatments. And Prince Harry says the world can't grow used to the war in Ukraine. He's made a surprise visit to Kyiv, saying he's there not as a politician, but as a soldier who understands service and a humanitarian. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 86 points at 10,389. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.16. LBC weather, dry and sunny for large parts of the UK. A warmer day, but chilly along the east coast. A high of 8 to 20 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I can start with some tough news, actually, about your taxes, our taxes, everybody's taxes. The OECD, in case you don't know what that organisation is, it's the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, so looks at international economies, compares them, that kind of thing. They have told us today that our taxes in the UK are going up faster than other workers in similar-sized, similarly rich economies. You'll know that the IMF a couple of weeks ago said that the UK economy would be hardest hit if the Iran war goes on much longer, or, you know, into the autumn, say. We're already feeling that with the cost of petrol, heating oil. Fuel bills, household fuel bills, okay for now, but only till July, and it's not clear what scale of package of help would be available from the government then. The Chancellor has already indicated it would be limited rather than universal. So let's just trot through a few things that were said on LBC earlier this morning before I get into the weeds of all this with you. At breakfast, Nick Ferrari asked the Minister for Border Security, a topic we're going to talk about much later, Border Security and Asylum, Alex Norris, about these OECD figures.
Well, Nick, we inherited a failing economy.
This is what you've done. Don't talk about 14 years of Tory. Last month's figures. That's the reality.
But we have to do that in order to turn the economy round. And we are seeing, obviously, with difficult global headwinds.
But you're not turning the economy around.
But Nick, if we look at where we were, certainly before recent global events, you saw inflation consistently falling, 6 cuts to interest rates. You've seen the figures today on borrowing falling. You know, the economy is getting to its right stage. And, you know, that's the work that we're doing.
And taking your calls earlier on Nick's show was Lord Walker, Richard Walker, the executive chairman of Iceland Foods and the government's cost of living champion. He used a turn of phrase that really made me prick up my ears, actually. He said the cost of living crisis is, as much as anything else, a feeling.
It's not just the raw cost of things. And of course, you know, the cost of some elements, energy is 20% of household budgets, is way too high. So yes, there are in certain areas. But what I also think is that the cost of living is a feeling. And it's a feeling that you've got a system that isn't quite working for you, or the deck is stacked against you and life is just a daily grind.
Yeah, I didn't interpret that to mean you're imagining it when he said it's a feeling. But whatever your reality is, and my goodness, the cost of living is a very readable reality, isn't it, in most people's lives. How is it making you feel? What is it making you feel? Because clearly the poorest will be feeling it more acutely, in all likelihood. But it's changing everybody's lives one way or another. So how is it making you feel? The cost of living crisis that we are living in and have been living in on and off really for some time. 0345 6060 973, the number you can text, 84850. I'm joined by Mohammed El Arian, Chief Economic Advisor at Allianz and former Deputy Director of the IMF, one of the organisations I mentioned earlier on. Good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Sheila, for having me.
When Lord Walker said the cost of living is also a feeling, do you agree with him about that? Clearly it's about facts and figures and the money people have available to spend, but it does really impact on people's lives, doesn't it?
Oh, totally impacts. I wouldn't have used the word feeling. I think what he was trying to capture is that we don't just judge ourselves in terms of what we can afford. We also judge ourselves in what we expect we can afford and what others are affording. So when there's a cost of living crisis, it tends to hit us in all three ways. We can afford less. We certainly are affording less than we want to afford, especially for our kids. And in addition, there are these rich people out there that are doing much better. He tried to capture that with the notion of feeling. I wouldn't use that word. I would just say that we judge in both absolute and relative terms.
And the OECD, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, concluding that our taxes here in the UK are going up faster than other workers in similar economies. This is a big problem between the populace and the government here at the moment, isn't it? Because they said they wouldn't go after workers' tax. They wouldn't increase taxes on workers. And one way or another they have. They've certainly increased taxes on employers, but one way or another, everybody's out of pocket, aren't they?
Yeah, so what do numbers tell us? There are 38 member countries of the OECD, and according to that organization, our take-home pay, relative to how much it's taxed, did the worst last year. Put in other way, between what workers pay and what employers